The following presentation is brought to you by Rant Entertainment Media. For the entertainment you love and the opinions and history you crave, visit rantemradio.com. The following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network. Continue. Every week, The Shining Wizards is brought to you free of charge, and we thank you for listening. But if you'd like to help support the show in other ways, here's a few things that you can do to help. Go to iTunes and Stitcher and leave us a review. If you shop at Amazon, visit amazon.shiningwizards.com and shop the way you usually do. It won't cost you anything extra, and a small percentage of your purchase will help support the show. If you'd like to buy some of our merchandise, visit prowrestlingtees.com/shiningwizards or shiningwizards.com/merch and purchase one of our t-shirts or some of our other great stuff. Follow us on Twitter @WizardsPodcast. Become our friend on Facebook @ShiningWizards. Check out our Instagram photos @WizardsPodcast. And for all our videos, visit youtube.com/TheShiningWizards. The Shining Wizards is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, TuneIn, The Shining Wizards Network, ShiningWizards.com, and Tuesdays live at 7 p.m. East on SWLive.net and RantEMRadio.com. From all of us at The Shining Wizards, we thank you for your continued support.
This is Brodus Clay, a.k.a. The Funkasaurus, and you're listening to The Shining Wizards podcast.
I have a small dick.
Titties! God damn!
From the only place where women are guaranteed not to be molested or sexually harassed. Probably because there's never been any women here. Welcome to the Shining Wizards, where it's wrestling talk.
A talk about wrestling.
Tony, Matt, and Kevin in studio. We have a very special guest, the monster, Steve Mack. What's going on, brother?
What up?
Oh, shit. We don't have his mic on?
Oh, wow. Look at that. Look at us.
Don't worry, Kevin.
It's on.
I'll get up.
It's on.
Professionals.
Yay.
The fuck?
I guess we should have said.
I don't know. You're sitting right there.
Yeah, I know. Jesus, really.
Kevin's in the doghouse.
Am I supposed to inspect?
You're supposed to do something.
Every microphone in here?
Yes.
I was doing a great pre-show Instagram live video.
Oh, God. And he got me my soda.
That's true.
Could it be any blurrier than last week's Instagram live photo?
Probably, yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Kevin's vision from last week. Oof.
Last show or when we went to WWE night at the Devil's game?
From what I hear, that night was worse.
It was a good time, but, you know.
Did your drink have a koozie, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
That's fucking epic. A Canadian koozie.
Canada.
Well,
Big fan. Big fan.
Of Canada.
That's Steve, right. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, guys. It's been a hot minute, huh?
That's true.
It's been quite a while.
Kevin's shooting the eyes at me. He's mad.
No, I wasn't.
Mad.
Oh, shit.
Here we go.
I'm watching the Devil's game.
It's 5th anniversary all over again.
It was Thursday night. Kevin's not. There's no Devil's game tonight.
Yay!
So we were busting balls before we went on the air. And Kevin said he's a really big hockey fan. That's why he watched the Devils. But then I went to the Devils game with Kevin on Thursday night. Kevin hooked us up with awesome seats.
Yeah. No thanks for that, huh?
I thanked you.
He's putting you over.
Look, right. You want to bury your fucking friends at Beefcake Charlie and Beach Bum Sean? Go ahead. I thanked you the whole ride home in the Uber.
You banked
it's not
them?
My fault.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, you were fucking... Fucking snot city. Holy shit.
Kev, thanks.
Kevin hooked us up, though. Awesome fucking seats. Kevin's such a big hockey fan.
How big is he?
He spent half the game running around looking for his friends.
Who I haven't seen in months.
So, months.
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 No, what?
We do a podcast
every week.
We do a podcast with somebody who we haven't seen in months. So, Kevin's friends greater than hockey. Hockey greater than podcast.
You understand that they have TVs in the bars.
Look, I'm just saying, such a big fan.
I am a big fan.
All right, I'm just saying.
Big fan.
Just saying. I ran around like a mark. We saw Daniel Bryan. I convinced Kevin to get up and run around with me. Like, I don't like fucking hockey. I don't give a shit.
Did Kevin run up to him going, Daniel,
no,
Shining
Wizard? I didn't want to do it. Matt was the mark of the evening.
Look, he was there. He was waving the fucking flag.
And then, he's in one corridor or one section. And then all of a sudden, there's a line of fans out to meet him. Then he moves to another one. And Matt's like, let's go.
Oh, were you chasing him?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We chased him for a section.
Jesus. He was gone. He disappeared.
You know what the funny thing is, too, though? Matt, like, always says, like, he's awkward when he meets people. Like, even when he meets wrestlers at, like, fan fests and things like that, he's like, oh, hey, I'm Matt. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I'm very awkward. I'm an awkward fucking person. I don't know what to tell you.
Which makes me wonder about some awkwardness you might have had a few weeks ago when you were angry.
No, there was no awkwardness in that.
I'm just saying.
Do you really want to revisit?
Even Kevin's looking at you.
No, because I don't know what you're talking about.
No, well, that's fucking par for the course.
I don't know what they're talking about.
He also, I'm just going to finish WWE Night, which was awesome. They played like fucking like Ric Flair promos in between like breaks in the game.
Wait, let me ask you a question. Did they play wrestling themes on the organ?
Yes. They did.
That's fucking cool.
And then they also played them during intermission.
That's pretty cool.
And you heard like Hogan's Real American. You heard they played Demolition, The Warrior. It was cool.
Because there's rumors that Hogan might be heading back to the E, actually.
But it's only a matter of time.
You called it the E. It's better than calling it New York.
That's true.
I hate when guys do that.
Let me ask you this. 15 years ago, it became WWE.
Yes.
People still, to this day, call it WWF.
Yeah, because... Yeah.
It's a fucking testament to how big the brand was.
Oh, yeah, of course. People remember that fondly.
Yeah.
And people still sometimes you'll even get the Titan reference.
Like, going to Titan.
Yes.
Going to Titan. Like,
Titan Tower. Yeah. It was Titan Sports for all those years.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, but it's still like when you get guys in the locker room, oh, well, you know, I work for New York. It's like, shut up.
That's just fucking stupid.
We're in New Jersey. Come on.
Enough for anything. We've talked about it before. The meaning about performing for Madison Square Garden, it's gone, dude.
Oh, it's still with me.
No,
I
tell all the guys that I hook up that, like, either through training or putting them over the years or showing them whatever, I always tell them, if you get a contract, I just told this to Mike Orlando, actually, this weekend. If you get a contract, make sure. I don't want a dark match. I don't want extra work. I just want to eat catering in Madison Square Garden. I'm the first one. If Ma for anybody else says that they tell people that, it's from me. I'm the guy from all these years back that's been telling everybody that.
No, fair enough. But it's like guys like us who grew up where it was the mecca of sports. Of course. And, you know,
it still is.
No, it still is.
I don't know. That Brooklyn building.
Exactly.
Barclays is taking over.
For TV.
Look, you look at Vince McMahon. I guarantee you Vince McMahon still sees it as an honor and a privilege and the fucking height of wrestling to wrestle at Madison Square Garden.
How many dumps you think Vince McMahon has taken in the garden?
Oh, protein, pal. Oh, shit, fucking power really, bars.
I've got to dump the kids off at the pool.
I call that one Shane. And that one Stephanie.
Hunter, get in here, goddammit.
You got to look at this. Look at that thing. That's all me.
Now, let me ask you this, though, because you would probably know better than anyone. This coming, I think the day after Christmas, WWE is running a house show at the Garden. The main event has been announced, John Cena versus Samoa Joe.
Juan Cena versus Joe.
Just Samoa. So you can't tell me that main eventing Madison Square Garden for Samoa Joe for the first time doesn't mean the world.
That's huge for Joe. Like, right? I've known Joe forever. So, and I know that Joe and Cena they've known each other even longer.
Right, from UPW and stuff.
Yeah, so, you know what I mean? I'm pretty sure for Joe is going to be probably the highlight of his WWE career, including like wrestling at WrestleMania and all that other good stuff that he'll eventually do. You know, I mean, it's hard to beat that. I know he's going to call Homicide and be like, hey, D, I'm here in the garden. Look, I'm in the ring. You know what I mean? Because he's a jerk like that sometimes.
And that's why when Tony, and he just left, so he can't really rebuttal yet. When people say that the aura of wrestling in Madison Square Garden is not there because maybe they don't do TV there as much anymore because Barclays is cheaper, I don't believe that for a second. because, I mean, we went to a house show not too long ago at the Garden.
We did. It was
amazing.
2 years ago after Christmas.
It was amazing.
It was awesome.
I think I was at that show, actually. Yeah. I will say this. I was at the house show right before the WrestleMania that Daniel Bryan won the world title. Right. And the only reason why I remember that is because that was like 20 days before WrestleMania. My sister had gotten tickets like on the Thursday. I was bummed about something and she was like, "You want to go watch wrestling?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." She's got these awesome tickets last minute on the aisle. So it kind of sucked because, you know, I'm not that I'm a celebrity or anything like that, but like, I'm kind of known. So I was trying to like keep my hat on and keep my face hidden. And it's funny that you guys are talking about Daniel Bryan because I see Daniel Bryan is doing his thing with Kane and Triple H and everybody. And after the match, it was right before intermission. After the match, he's walking down the aisle, giving everybody a pound. He stops and he sees me. He's like, "Steve!" I was like, "What's up, Dragon?" So like, he's giving me this big hug, and like, it was like 45 seconds. We were just talking. "Bro, I'm so proud of you. That's so awesome. Man, I'm so good, happy to see you, blah, blah, blah." And like, security came over. They're like, "We need you in the back," right? So then, I'm not thinking anything of it. And my phone starts blowing up. All my friends that were in the building, they were like, "You were just all over all the screens." And at first, I was like, "Damn it." But then like, later on, I was like, "That's kind of cool. It's on the MSG screens."
See, that's awesome. That story in amongst itself just proves the point that we're trying to make.
Oh, no, definitely. Like, there's still a huge R of wrestling in MSG. Huge. Especially for all the New York guys.
Yeah. You know? Guys that cut their teeth and did everything in this area, New Jersey, New York.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm pretty sure.
And your like, crew. For a oh, yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. All of us. It means something. Especially that we've been watching wrestling since the, some of us, the 70s. You know what I mean? But like MSG house shows every month. That was the thing. You had to go and see what was going to happen and who was going to defend, who's going to take on Bob Backlund and who's going to take on Don Morocco and all that stuff. And just, you know, I mean, just so much cool stuff. And when you look back at the history of MSG and what it means to pro wrestling, so, you know. And well, I know guys like EYFBO, because I'm looking at their picture right now. I know guys like EYFBO, even though they're under contract with TNA, I'm pretty sure the Garden is a future destination for them. So, you know, it means a lot to them.
I hope so for them. Better. I mean,
yeah. Yeah,
I
think you guys all deserve it. They'll make it there.
You talk about the history of professional wrestling, and you yourself, obviously, you are a fan of wrestling. And November 9th was the 20th anniversary of the Montreal Screwjob. And I just had this moment today because I listened to the Bruce Pritchard podcast.
What a great podcast.
Something to Wrestle.
I love that
they
podcast.
Did a 4.5-hour show on Bret Hart. From 96 to 97.
How long?
4.5 hours.
Yeah. Jeez,
and the thing is, you listen to it.
It goes fast.
It's so good, yeah.
I will never be able to get over that. I came to that conclusion today.
Today.
Benoit killing his family and himself. Tragic. Horrible. I don't care.
Wow.
You know, I was talking to my buddy, Steamboat losing to the Honky Tonk Man. He can't get over it. Don't care. There's so much wrestling history I don't care about. I can't get over the Montreal Screwjob. Is there something for you where you just can't get over it?
Yeah, when I saw this week on Facebook everybody lighting up about it being the 20-year anniversary, I was kind of like, damn, man, 20 years. Because by that point, I had already wrestled my first match in the ring, even though I wasn't trained, but me and Key were able to get in the ring at one point. And I'm like, wow, how is this all 20 years ago? And then the whole thing of being a huge Bret the Hitman Hart fan.
Yeah.
And just, you know, like, and I like Shawn Michaels, but Bret was just, he was awesome. And in real life, I've met him a handful of times. I hung out with him a few times. He's a cool dude. Like, you know, he's a cool ass millionaire. Let's put it that way.
There
you know
you
what
go.
I'm saying? Like, that's the best way you can put it. But when you look back to that era of wrestling, he's what stood out the most, Bret Hart. He made everybody want to be a pure wrestler. Everybody, yeah. You know, there was times where, like, people wanted to be Superfly and jump off the top rope. And there were times where people wanted to do steroids and be like Hulk Hogan. But, you know, when you saw pure wrestling for Bret Hart, you wanted to do that. You wanted to put on the sharpshooter. I remember Key and I taking turns. Oh, you can't do the sharpshooter. I can. Like when we were kids, yeah. You know I mean, wrestling each other's, you know, in our bedrooms. Dude, you can't do the sharpshooter today. I'm doing it. No. Sorry, I'm doing it. You know what I mean?
Like that's 100%.
That's just what Bret Hart stood for. And then to see him get screwed over, it was kind of like, I don't care what the situation was, politics back. You knew after Medusa did whatever she did, there was going to be no chance that he was going to bring that belt on to WCW. And Vince should have thought about that. But I guess, you know, he's just doing what he had to do for the business.
I agree with you in a sense that I think Brett had the integrity not to do it. But, like, as time goes by and after year passes, and again, me and Matt, Bret Hart's my favorite wrestler of all time. I'm thinking the more, again, as years go by and the more I'm thinking about it, I'm like, would it really been that big a deal if you, I mean, I know he had creative control, so, I mean, that's one thing. But, I mean, would it really have been that big a deal to lose the belt? Like, you're going to make $9 million a year for, like, I don't know for how long.
But it wasn't about him. It was losing the belt to Sean.
No, in Canada.
That was the problem. He didn't want to lose to Sean because he went to him. This is what this is between his book and the Wrestling Observer and shoot interviews and everything. He had gone to Sean and said, I'm going to drop the title to you. And I hope one day that you can return the favor. And Sean said, I respect that, but I'm not going to do that. And at that point, that was when Bret Hart said, I'm not losing the title to him, especially in Canada. And then everything fell apart. Vince offered him 20 years for whatever.
That was prior to that. That was in 96.
No, that was in 97.
What
when Vince offered him 20 years?
That was after he lost to Sean at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 12.
No, that was after Survivor Series when his contract was up and he won it.
96.
He gave him the 20-year deal.
Towards the end of 96, the beginning of 97.
Yes.
He gave him the 20-year deal and he couldn't afford
it. Worth what, $10 million?
He had a nig on it, and then that's when he told him to go see if Bischoff was still interested.
Right.
Right. And again, I guess once that conversation happens, Brett kind of loses that creative control clause. Like, he loses that to me.
Well, he had technically had worked all the dates in his contract, so if he wanted to, he didn't even need to show up for Survivor Series.
Oh.
But now here's where I throw the curveball.
Go.
What about it being all a giant work?
There's been some people that think that.
I think it sometimes. That's I mean, for the most
that's
part,
that's a huge work.
No, not really. If you keep it limited to 4 or 5 people at most that know about it.
Yeah, but I don't think you could have seen WCW folding like that.
I don't think they. I think what it was. I think if it was a work, the motive behind Vince, one, he knew he wanted to do the Vince McMahon character. He was already leaning towards that. But two, him and Brett were still boys, and he wanted to look out for Brett. So what better way to give Brett some momentum? Now, it might sound a little ridiculous. You know, I'm sending him to the competition so that he could be hot fire. Vince knows no matter what Brett does, he could show up in a wheelchair. People are going to watch Nitro no matter what. But if he goes in, he's looking out for his boy to get the best possible situation for him. I mean, he gave him the okay to talk to Bischoff in the first place. So that means he cared about him enough to say, well, you know, listen, I know you're going to go and be a star over there. Let's work something out together. And maybe, you know, you could do something for me. I'll do something for you and, you know, stuff like that. But then politics get in the way.
Right.
You know?
And he definitely wasn't the star in WCW.
No, not at all.
So do you think that their relationship, if the screwjob had not happened and Vince was the one that gave Bret Hart permission to talk to WCW in the first place, would their relationship have been still amicable if Owen hadn't passed away under his watch?
I don't know.
Because wasn't the whole thing Bret Hart was always pissed about the screwjob? Or would he have gotten over that a lot earlier if Owen hadn't died?
I think he definitely would have gotten over it sooner. Because there was a lot of people who were still around that were in Brett's ear that were still with the WWE at the time.
Right.
But I think, you know, see, everyone says the same thing. When it comes to certain aspects of the business, Brett stayed bitter for a very long time towards certain things, and he never got over it. So I think that might have still sat with him for a long time, but, you know, Vince would have reached out to him eventually.
Right.
No matter what. So I think as long as they were able to work together, you know, like when he wanted his video library and they met and they had snipers at the park and all that nonsense. You know what I mean? I think eventually they would have been able to work something out.
Who has it been said in shoot interviews or even the Pritchard podcast who Brett was more mad at? Was it Vince or was it Sean? Has he ever made a statement one way or the other who he was more pissed at?
I mean, he's
got to be Sean.
He fucking punched Vince, though.
After the fact.
And Sean was there in the locker room after it happened.
Well, Brett was, I guess, still under the impression that Sean didn't know.
Well, Sean Ed was in the corner crying, telling him he knew nothing.
Like, so, like, I mean, I feel like he, I don't know who he would get.
I think Sean in the long run, because Sean held the lie the longest. Vince, he gave his hand right away.
Right.
Sean had to sit there and, I don't know nothing. I don't know nothing. I don't know nothing. And then 10 years later, okay, I knew something. You know what I mean? Like, so
well,
I,
that's
if it's me,
Jesus.
I would definitely want to punch him in the face. You know?
Yeah. I still want to punch him in his face. Fucking jerk off.
He wouldn't be able to see it coming either.
And you know what? It doesn't make it right that he found Jesus. He was a fucking piece of shit. His in-ring performance is great. He will always be one of the best of all time. Outside of Eddie Guerrero. I think Eddie Guerrero was much better. Not much better. Excuse me. I'm overstepping my boundaries.
Yeah, but, all right, fine, but
that's hot.
Eddie Guerrero was also a piece of shit, too, if you want to think about it.
Yeah, but Eddie Guerrero never screwed anyone. Eddie Guerrero didn't forfeit 3 championships in a matter of 3 years because he lost his smile because he got fucking beat up.
I need to hear why Eddie Guerrero is a piece of shit.
No, it's not Eddie Guerrero per se, but everybody's a piece of shit. It's all a matter of degree.
Yeah, but not to the extent. Shawn Michaels was the biggest piece of shit.
Fair enough.
Hands down.
Bigger piece of shit than anybody else on the planet?
In the wrestling business. Okay. Outside of maybe you.
Me?
The Experiment.
Oh, what?
And Gino Caruso.
That's not
damn,
fair.
Gino.
Jeez, what did Gino ever do to you?
What did he tried to fight me when I was 16.
You were 17.
He kicked me out.
He said, no. When do you turn 18? In a year, that's how it works, asshole.
16 was when he took me outside behind the school. 17 was when he asked me how old I was. Two different occasions.
Oh, I didn't realize there were two.
And then later
in
life.
They sort of blurred together.
Later in life, I figured out he wasn't really Italian, and that was the straw that broke the camel's
back. So who do you hate more, Shawn Michaels or Gino Caruso?
Shawn Michaels, 100%.
Damn.
I can't. Everything about Shawn Michaels bothers me. Even now, I watched the fucking Rivalries DVD.
Wait. You didn't feel better about yourself seeing him dressed as the Colonel on one of those awful pay-per-views?
No! No!
What about when they hugged on TV when Bret Hart came back after 12 years? They hugged!
You know what that hug reminded me of? When Stone Cold and Vince hugged.
And Stone Cold face?
Yeah.
Fucking A. Perfect. I knew immediately where you were going.
That's all I saw when the two of them hugged and they were doing that fake pat in the back.
Are you talking about when he first won the title or was that later on when Austin turned heel?
When Austin turned heel. Oh. And him and Vince,
well,
they were hugging
soul
in the back.
To the devil
yeah.
himself.
And he has his eyes wide open.
No, wait. Before you go on.
Oh,
I did want to bring this up. You were pretty close with Eddie Guerrero, right?
I wasn't close with him, but we worked on a bunch.
No, but you were friendly. Yeah. I don't want you to think like, oh, Eddie Guerrero's a piece of shit.
No,
I just wanted to
know why Eddie's a piece of shit. Because, everybody, you're right. Everybody is a piece of shit.
Ted DiBiase had him on the show a couple weeks ago. He's a piece of shit.
Wait, come on, dude.
What? He was a womanizer.
Yeah, well, so was Shawn Michaels.
Okay. Shawn Michaels was the biggest piece of shit.
Was. Was.
Oh, God. He found God.
He
good
found
for
Jesus.
Him.
So you know, if
this
you
is
talk
me making
to,
the jerk off motion.
I'm sure he doesn't mind me saying, if you talk to Shane Helms, finding God didn't make him any less of a piece of shit. So,
well, Jim Cornette, the same
ding.
Thing.
Yeah. So Shane Helms agrees with you.
God dang.
And he's very vocal about it, Shane Helms.
By the way, as an aside, I had to tap out on Jim Cornette's experience.
Why?
It too much with the fucking politics.
Well,
dude.
What do you fucking expect?
Too much with the politics, with the fucking guns. I'm like, why am I listening to this? I don't want to hear this shit. I want Jim Cornette to tell me fucking stories and interview people and talk about wrestling.
God damn.
I listen to the drive-through, but I won't listen. I can't listen to the experience anymore. Unless he's talking about blowing beautiful Bobby.
One of the worst things you've ever done.
No, it wasn't.
There was no context to it. Whatever. We're not getting off topic. Steve Monster Mac is in studio. One half up to Hit Squad. He's on the Twitter machine at Steve Mac DHS. Give him a follow. Steve's doing a lot of great things. I think we all agree Shawn Michaels is the biggest piece of shit in the wrestling.
He's a piece of shit. He's not the piece of shit.
Correct. Ding! Let me
you want to fuck with the soundboard?
We mentioned Austin's heel turn before. I just had a quick aside question for you.
Uh-huh.
Which heel turn did you like or dislike more? Austin or Goldberg?
The one that I disliked the most was Austin, because Austin was still on fire and there was nothing that you could do to change that. Goldberg, it was kind of like, all right, Goldberg needs to be a heel already.
Yeah, and it was, I guess also it was WC, it was like the third change of like, it was like Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff.
Yeah.
And it was 2000. Everyone was checking out at WCW.
You had to be a real fan to know that Goldberg even was still working. You know what I mean?
I'm back!
I'm better than ever!
You know how many girls I know that want Eric Bischoff in the worst way, and I can't understand it?
Dude, he started as a model for like Sears. Yeah, he's an old-ass Sears catalog.
It's the hair. Chicks dig the hair.
He's a fucking Ken doll, dude.
What do I know about hair, though?
You know, there used to be stories about, like, the whole circle of those guys would tag out each other's wives and
Atlanta Gold Club.
Fuck yeah.
Did you hear Ice Train used to smash Kimberly Page?
Stop it.
I wouldn't doubt it. I bet your bitch did, too.
I never heard that.
Ice Train was the man.
He was.
I heard John Tenta fucked all of them.
I could see that happening.
Maybe.
What?
He's the shark, bro. He likes to swim in the fucking veg.
Oh,
go fuck your hand.
That was terrible.
Oh, go fuck
yourself. No, it's not dueling.
Like
it's not dueling soundboards.
Yes, it is.
Not the nerd.
Get out of your system.
Let's do this. This is the Tony drop minute and a half.
Wait, right now. Drop Donald Trump.
Titties.
Dude, oh, you.
I have a small dick.
You have 30 more seconds.
Said, yeah. Oh, wait, 30 seconds?
And it's not like they didn't accept Stan, like, oh, we want Dennis, because they hated fucking Dennis Condrey, and they hated fucking Bobby Eaton, and they hated me. So it's not like,
turn
he's
off.
Taking Dennis's place.
Turn
I'm not going to
Five
like
seconds.
Him. It's, oh, they've got another fucking, he's probably a bigger gay queer faggot than that other.
You're a fucking dildo. That could have been disastrous.
Surrounded by assholes.
We could have been knocked off the fucking ranch.
Oh, sorry about that.
All right, 30 seconds. I'm done.
You're out.
All right. In the meantime, fuck you.
Let's proceed. Matt, go back to what you were about to... If you can remember.
If you will.
You worked Pro Wrestling Magic this weekend against some fucking clown who claims he's the king of New York with his fucking 600 Twitter followers calling us lame today.
Who's this?
Tony's like,
I'm sorry, I was
fucking
working today.
An old person that just got woken up from a fucking thunderstorm.
Is it time for my mush?
Who was his name? EC Negro?
EC Negro, Jarrell, Coney, King of New York.
What's his deal? He called us lame. I didn't appreciate that.
Who, us?
He mentioned that the Shining Wizards were lame.
Because we haven't had him on the show.
Oh, fuck your hand, dude.
Yeah, right? 600 followers? He's talking about getting ratings? Come on, bro.
Bro, you need us, bro.
Oh, shit. Tony's throwing shade.
No. That's right. I'm throwing shade.
So you wrestled him this week in a Pro Wrestling Magic, and he used some chicanery to get the W?
Yeah, he used brass knucks.
What a bitch.
Some cheap ass shit.
But, you know, I beat the shit out of him, and he had a Dan Moff size chop mark on his back. I had him against the pole, and I chopped the fuck out of him. I don't chop people because my chops, they're not loud chops. When I chop, they don't make any sound. That means they hurt. So this one was really loud, and it hurt a lot.
Wait. Just because they make sound doesn't mean they don't hurt.
Listen, no.
Ask Matt about that.
I'm going to shift gears just for a second because I just went on Twitter.
Oh, Jesus.
You don't think Nia Jax is good looking right now?
Oh, yeah. Nia Jax is beautiful.
Stop! Beautiful.
Listen, this is... Wait, all right, so I'm about to blow up a little secret.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
She's the second most beautiful woman in all of WWE.
Who's number one?
All the rest are tied.
Wait, you're going to tell me Tamina Snuka is hotter than...
Yes.
No, stop it.
Dude, she'll jump off the fucking bedpost onto your cock.
She looks great.
She'll fucking throw up the shaka bra.
So,
she'll knock you off the side of the highway while you're pissing. Everything.
She's very pretty. I'm sorry.
So I'm going to give away a little secret. Yeah. I'm sure Moff is going to be a little upset about this.
Oh, but, no.
Don't get us heat with Moff, please.
So when Moff went to go do his WWE nonsense earlier this summer, I was a little heated because he didn't tell me about it. And I know that he didn't try to get me on it. Which is something else. I've gotten over that. But one of the things that I hated was right away when we finally started talking about it, he was like, Nia Jax is so beautiful in person. And I totally agree because I think that. And he's like, I hate what they make her wear, because it's true. What they make her wear is purposely made her look fatter than what she is.
I knew it!
Yeah, no, you can
look. No, I think they put that on her to hold shit in.
No, listen,
you're a fucking dickhead.
As a lover of BBWs my entire life, I love the big, beautiful women.
That's right.
But I could tell when they try to make themselves look skinnier and when they try to make themselves look fatter. And the WWE definitely wants her to look fatter than what she is.
I've been saying that forever.
Do you think there's stuff in her gear? Or?
No, it's just they're making it tighter than what it is, so it makes the fat stand out more. Tell you, look at pictures of her with what's his name, Gallows.
Oh shit!
They're always together. I guess I don't know what's going on there. I guess they're friends.
There you go.
But they're always together. And when you see her next to him, she looks tiny. But it's because the rest of the girls, they're all 5'95", so she looks like a monster next to them. Especially Sasha Banks. What's Sasha Banks? 5'1", 5'2", like 100 pounds?
Alexa Bliss.
Oh, Alexa Bliss is even smaller.
Sasha Banks could be uglier than Nia Jax.
That's a very...
what is with you, bro?
Ring the bell. I'll allow it.
I don't know. I love Sasha Banks, too.
Oh, so. My dude.
She's one of the few small girls that I like.
Dude, Alexa Bliss is fucking... She is the goddess.
She is banging.
No doubt about
banging.
It. Dude, the fucking pose where she puts the belt over her shoulder, it's fucking genius. It's something nobody's ever done before.
Except for Harley Quinn?
Oh.
Harley Quinn's not a wrestler, and Nia Jax is a fucking slob.
No, but it's the pose, it's the look. Hey, dude... I caught 3 minutes of Raw, and one of those minutes was her interview in the back, and she was just like, who gives a shit? She's like, I left SmackDown. It's the B show now. She's like, I'm the goddess. Her fucking interview was on point, and she delivered it perfectly.
You know what it is about her that so many people find her so much more attractive? Is that she's the kind of girl that you know you have no chance of getting. So when you finally get it, you're like, you stupid slob, come here, and you smack her face. You know what I mean? Like, there's that satisfaction of finally getting it and defiling her and making her look like an ultimate animal.
I have like the weird opposite view. I feel like she just had like the slutty cheerleader in high school, had everyone that she wanted, like fucking, and then went off to college for a year before she dropped out. Had daddy issues and went to go start wrestling school and just banged everyone.
Are you talking about Charlotte Flair?
No.
Where'd you put the bell, you dick?
Yeah, I knocked it off this fucking table.
Listen, I can say that though. She talked about it on the 30 for 30. So it's all legal.
That's fair. That's fair legal. Game.
Did you enjoy the 30 for 30?
Oh, it was awesome. I loved it.
Really?
I'll be honest. I met Reed a couple of times, and when they started talking about that and me being a dad and stuff like that, that definitely got to my heart. But I love Ric Flair. It's hard not to love him. He's an insane character.
You're right. It's hard not to love him, but he's also a piece of shit.
He is. He definitely, he'll be the first to tell you that he's a piece of shit.
Well, that's what fucking made it so like fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. Listen to him. He's just like, I was faithful for one day. Okay.
That was the greatest line.
Ric Flair put everyone fucking over.
He did.
Everyone.
He did.
He had 6 matches at the beginning of 1994, and he lost every one of them between Hogan and Savage.
Yep.
Every fucking high profile match.
Actually, when was the Vader match? Was
93?
What,
Flair and Vader?
Yeah.
The retirement match at Starrcade?
He got
fucking
destroyed
awesome.
By Vader.
That was an
Vader.
Awesome match.
Yeah, I mean, not that he really had a say, because Vader was he was still a monster at that point, but he said it. He was best at selling. He sold for everybody. Part of the thing that makes the Hit Squad is that when we go in there with the younger guys, they shouldn't have any chance, but we always make them look like they have a fair chance. I got that. I mean, Moffitt might be different. He has a lot of other guys that he looks up to than I do. But part of where I get it from is watching Ric Flair create Sting. When he created Sting, he took this guy from nowhere. I mean, he was hot in UWF and stuff like that. But as far as WCW, NWA, he took him from nowhere and in one night made this guy a main eventer for life. You know what I mean? And that's something that whenever we were in there in the ring with anybody, whether it was Jay Lethal, any of Special K, EYFBO, anybody, we always did our best to make them shine. We got our heat back later on. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just so fucking sad. Like, nobody could tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, Rick, maybe you want to cut back a little bit. Maybe you want to put some of that shit away for the future. You know what I'm saying? Because like,
What are you talking about? Him cutting back on though.
The fucking boozing, the spending money on his clothes.
Everyone was doing it.
But he was the ringleader. Everybody did it because he was doing it.
No, right. Actually, he said it, though. He didn't say it on this, but he said it before. That was the attitude of the champions back in the day. They were champions making the top money. They were spending, buying everybody drinks at the bar. That's what it really comes down to. That's how he came up. He came up with Dusty. He came up with Dick Murdoch. All these guys, they would take... And, you know, make sure whatever top money they were getting it for a reason. So they were making sure that they would share it with the boys because the boys had to work with them and they had to, you know, put them over.
Fair enough, but couldn't have put a little something away.
He should have. You're right. You're absolutely right.
And they also said he was still living that lifestyle long after he had any reason to because he wasn't the champ anymore.
But he said himself, he was miserable.
That's what he knew.
Yeah.
Like Ric Flair's. What's he been in, 40 years? More?
Something like that, yeah.
50?
Yeah, but he was also stuck wrestling into the 2010s, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but Triple H saw that he still had the fire in him, and they just had to get the jump start going. Those last couple years of WCW ruined him.
Yeah.
It ruined everyone.
Ric Flair wrestled the last match on Nitro in a fucking t-shirt because he didn't know he was wrestling and he was out of shape.
He hadn't been on TV like for months before that either, I don't think.
Well, he was involved in the whole like trying to run the WCW. Wasn't he in a feud with Dallas Page or Kevin Nash or something over that?
The commissionership?
Yeah, and it was like all as an aside to like the Millionaires Club and like the young guys.
I think there was also a title change on a Thunder where Ric Flair fought Kevin Nash, and Ric Flair was wearing slacks and a shirt, I think.
Yeah.
Because they were also playing off that Ric Flair was going nuts. Yeah. That was another washed-up, awful thing that they made him do.
There's a lot of awful things.
But they bring back the Four Horsemen.
But see, listen, this is the thing that I'm on 20 years now, right? I'm going to my 21st year. There are such incredible highs when you're in there and you're in front of thousands. The most I've ever wrestled in front of was 20,000 in Puerto Rico. And that was just
insane. He says it so nonchalantly.
When you look at how most of these guys now, they're all wrestling in front of 40,000 at WrestleMania or 80,000, 100,000. You know what I mean? Like 20,000 is just a minimal crowd when you really think about, you know, the guy who's been around for a hot minute. You know what I mean? But like that 20,000 was insane. Like I had people throwing batteries at me, throwing cups of piss at me, and I was in my glory.
Sorry about that.
Who did you work?
Ricky Banderas for IWA Puerto Rico.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it was a street fight, so we were going nuts. You know what I mean? I actually got yelled at because I wasn't hitting him enough.
But with all the history of like how like riotous Puerto Rico is, what made you decide to want to go down there?
Oh, it was awesome. It's Puerto Rico, man.
Yeah, but like, still, like we've heard stories. Ric Flair.
And listen, I got a story for you, and I can tell you firsthand. So the whole weekend, Ricky Banderas had just come back from knee surgery. So I was like his second opponent. Moff went the week after me, and he was like his third opponent. But so the last night that we're there, we're at this weird indoor tennis court building, and they had like a fence that was in the ground, posted into the ground, and it had a chain link fence. And there was I'm beating up Ricky, and there was this little girl squatting down and cheering for Ricky, and she couldn't have been more than 10. And I picked my leg back. We always laugh. I almost kicked the back of my head with my ankle because I brought it back far enough so she could see that I was going to kick where she was at. I kicked the fence right where she was at. She moved. Everybody, boo! I had to be escorted out by the cops. It was awesome, right? So we go to eat later on, right after the show, and I'm online trying to order some food, and this lady walks up to me. She's like, excuse me, perfect English. It wasn't even like Hispanic, like, excuse me, mira, you know, it wasn't none of it. Was, excuse me, did you wrestle tonight? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, you know that little girl that you went to go kick her face? That was my daughter. And the lady opens up her purse. She's got this like 6-inch knife. And she goes, next time you do that, this is going inside of you. Have a good night. And she walked away. And I just looked. I was like, wow.
That's
what
awesome.
The fuck?
That's awesome.
Fucking A, that's awesome.
Steve could have been pork chops for somebody's dinner.
He's not, though. He's sitting on your couch.
He could have been.
Wow.
That's insane.
That's like a shit you see out of the movies.
And the thing was, at first, I wouldn't have even thought that she was going to do that. I thought it was like, because I have family in Puerto Rico, so I thought it was like one of my mom's cousins or something like that. Because the lady was like in her 40s, and I'm like, you know, I think I was, 23 or 24, so I'm not really like thinking too, you know, too crazy. And just how calm she was is what really fucked me up, because she was just, excuse me. And like I said, had it been, mira, ekumi, usted luchan, you know what I mean? If it would have been one of those, I would have been like,
Yeah, but had she said that, she might have just taken the knife out and plunged.
Yeah, no, she wouldn't have said shit. She would have just stabbed me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's awesome.
It's not awesome. But he could have been filleted in Puerto Rico.
Look, you hear a story like that though, and like that's you want to have that experience.
No, I don't.
No, but that's like firsthand justification that all those stories are fucking true.
Oh no, they're like, very true, my friend.
It's just
true.
like let me ask, like, you. Trying to explain to somebody the aura of the ECW arena that has never been there and never seen the ECW show live, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. Like, you had to be there.
I yep. never felt once that I was going to get stabbed, shanked, shot, or anything like that in ECW. Oh, never.
I felt like that a few times. Sitting in the crowd before I became a wrestler.
Right?
Yeah.
But the whole point of this was, though, you were asking about Ric Flair. Stuff like that. You see how my face lit up when I was telling you guys a story? Ric Flair has been through that so many times, and that's the, for him, those are the best memories because he's with his boys. All these memories of Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine and Wahoo McDaniel traveling all over Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch. Bro, there were stories, great stories of, that I've heard over the years about how, I think it was Dick Murdoch passed out and they had the elevator door closing on his head at the hotel over and over again. And like, but like, all that stuff, it's so good. And then when you go home, like, the perfect way I could describe is when we went to Japan. We go to Japan, they have people, reporters, waiting for me and Moff, and it's hit squad, because they built us up for a month before we went over there. And then we do this stuff, we're in magazines, we're on TV while we're there, we see all this stuff, all these people stopping us, asking us at Kirkland Hall and everywhere that we go, can we get your autograph, can we get your picture? Like, it was big time, like, we were rock stars. And then we get on the plane and we're just Steve and Danny coming home. And that really fucks with your psyche. And I'm pretty sure Ric Flair, the only way he could feel like Ric Flair, and he said it, not Richard Flair, whatever.
It was
Ric Flair. It's Ric. He's Ric Flair. He's not Richard Flair.
Then why?
It's a mentality.
That makes sense.
You can't get into it unless you're in that spot, bro. I'm telling you. When you're in that spot, all you want is for people to cheer. Boo, cheer, whatever it is that they're doing for you. And then when they stop, or when you stop being in the main event working with the best talent, and next thing you know, you're working with the green talent, or the talent that doesn't get how to make money, or the talent that doesn't understand how to have fun, it fucks with you. You start to hate wrestling. All my friends that I know, they look at me and they're like, I don't understand how you love wrestling so much. Because I just have fun. I love being in the ring. I love seeing the ropes. I love the canvas. I don't even care if there's people in the building. I just love seeing the wrestling ring and being around it. My friends, it's become a business. And because it became a business to them, they lost the fun part of it. You know what I'm saying? And so they hate it, but they have to do it because they want to get that check. And it's not just my friends. There's a lot of people. You know what I mean? But that's the mentality of a pro wrestler as you go on into this thing, going in decades and decades.
Do you think his story is more of a happy one or a tragic one?
Tragic. Tragic.
It's very tragic.
Yeah.
My wife watched it with me, and my wife, she knows who Ric Flair is. Man, like, they start getting deeper into, like, him not being around and how he wasn't there to be a father. And she's like, bro, she's like, this is the feels, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
This is sad. And then when Reed dies, she's like, this is a lot.
He says? He's like, I'm not going to be remembered as a great father. I'm not going to be remembered as a great man. But if you remember me as a great wrestler, then I'm okay with that. That should say what kind of place that he's at, that he feels that way. When we all look at him as a legend,
yeah.
Everybody, it's not just us. Everybody in the business looks at him as a legend. Unless they got heat with him. But even then, they still have to be like, yeah, I hate that piece of shit legend, Ric Flair. You know what I'm saying? But like, everybody looks at him as a legend. He can't see that. He can only see the broken down guy who isn't a main eventer and isn't making millions anymore.
But that's the thing. Like, he's inside that bubble. Like, we all stand on the outside and we're in awe of everything that he's done. But like you said earlier, we're not the ones living that. We're mm-hmm. not the ones in there.
And again, just to piggyback on Max's thing, like, very few guys in wrestling transcend the business and make it to a different level where they get an ESPN special.
Yep.
Like Andre the Giant, Hogan, Flair, and if you want to put The Rock, obviously, and Cena,
Dusty Rhodes.
And Scott
Dusty
Hall.
Rhodes was the first, like...
But, like, yeah, mega star, mm-hmm. like, everywhere. And it's just, like, it's another thing that to make it in your craft, it's one thing. To absolutely, like, supersede your craft to where everyone who hasn't probably watched wrestling in 20 years, all I saw on Facebook was friends of mine who haven't watched wrestling in forever talking about the Ric Flair 30 for 30. And the fact that he can't, he's not friends with us minions on, you know, fucking Facebook to see how many people that don't watch wrestling watch that 30 for 30. It's ridiculous. And to an extent, it is sad. But again, to piggyback off of Max, it's just a shame. And it's a very good point that you made about how he just doesn't see himself the way the entire world, not just the wrestling world, the entire world sees him.
I'm not on his level, but I could totally understand because part of the thing Homicide yells at me about all the time, you need to understand how good you are. I never see how good, like, I know I could do certain things. Like, I'm a big guy who could do a Rana. You know what I'm saying? Like, stuff like that is cool. But to me, because, you know, I didn't make it to TV like my boys. Yeah, I did my stuff where I got certain shots here and there, but I didn't have a contract. So out of all my boys, I'm the only one, well, me and Moff, but, you know, like, I didn't get that contract. I didn't get to that stage, and they all, like, I don't understand. He's so smart. He should have gotten there. And, like, part of me is like, that fucking sucks. I'm not good. I'm horrible. And then I'll watch something, and I'm like, wait, I'm fucking great. What the fuck is wrong with me? You know what I mean? But then, like, I really do, like, look at how everything is, and I'm like, you know what? Sometimes I think maybe, yeah, I was destined to be a pro wrestler, but then sometimes I think I was destined to be someone that motivates other people to be better at pro wrestling, because there's a lot of guys that I've helped over the years that are all, they've all had contracts, they've all done stuff, they toured internationally, gone all over the world. Me, I did one tour of Japan, one tour of Puerto Rico. I should have done more, but right. I didn't. And there's a reason for it. Whether it was because I wasn't hustling hard enough, I was depressed at times, or whatever it was that kept me from it, I kept myself from doing more when I should have done more. But, you know, at the end of the day, I've done a lot of cool stuff that people can't even touch.
Fuck yeah,
dude. You know what I mean? So, like, you got to balance it. You have to balance it. And it's hard because there are times. I look at EYFBO. I don't think it's a secret. I think people know. I think Mike Johnson put it out there. That was supposed to be me and Moff.
He did.
That was supposed to be me and Moff being LAX.
Yep.
And we had to turn it down because they hit us up on a Tuesday to be down there for Friday. We're not kids. We have jobs. We have responsibilities. We have families. We can't just jump. If you would have given us a month's notice, we would have been LAX. You know what I mean? But we had to turn it down, and I told Homicide, and Homicide told Conan, make sure Mike, if we're not there, Mike and Angel are there, because we knew that was something that they could have handled. You know what I mean? But every once in a while, I'll have people that hit me up. It doesn't bother me. I'm at peace with it. You know what I mean? But I have people that hit me up. Man, that would have been so cool if it had been you guys, especially when Key joined LAX, because that's our family. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
It would have been, you know, so cool to be a part of that. But that wasn't meant for me and Moff. That was meant for Mike and Angel. You know what I'm saying? And that's how I rationale things. Like, I'm happy that I helped get them there. Because if you look, Mike does it the most. They always throw up the Hit Squad sign for a reason. Because we helped them get there. The last 2 years we spent going to hell and back every time we got in the ring with them at Beyond or GCW or wherever it was. We were grooming them to get to that level. And they shouted us out every time they're on TV. I appreciate the shout out. You know what I mean?
You know, that's the thing. Like, you sit here and you're like, oh, that was their spot. And you say, like, yeah, you've been in this business 20 years, but your story's not over yet.
No, it's not.
You know what I'm saying?
It's not. But you know what it is? I could see the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm a lot closer there to the end than.
Well, of course. I mean, we all get older. I mean,
yeah,
of course. You know.
And I do not want to be one of these guys that's just trying to be in the ring and hang with these kids. Cause listen, today's pro wrestler is a different type of animal. They're all MMA athletes. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that to be funny or anything, but if you look at them, they're all jacked up naturally. And, you know, just straight up animals. When I first started, you had maybe two or three guys that looked like that. Now they all look like that.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. Do you think that helps or you think that hinders the business that everybody's kind of like, you know, looking like this supreme athlete now?
I think it hurts it a lot, but it also builds some sort of credibility. But again, I think it hurts because when you look at Ring of Honor, they all look the same. Yeah. Who stands out though? The guys that look different. Bubba Ray Dudley, old ass dude. Yeah, he just retired or whatever, but old ass dude, still big as hell.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, even when Bubba first came up, he was just a big guy. And then even as his career progressed, when they brought back ECW, mm-hmm. when he came back with D-Von, even at that point, even Joey Styles, like, he's looking jacked. And from that point forward, he just got in tremendous shape.
Yeah, no, he had to, because in order to compete with today's talent, dude, look at Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal is shredded. Doesn't work out one bit. Right?
That's crazy.
I know. Trust me. I know. You know what I mean? I look at food and I'm gaining 20 pounds, you know? Like, and I've done my best. Like, my highest, I was 330. Right now, I'm at 275.
I was about to say, good, you look good when you walked in.
Thank you.
Holy, good Lord. You had an extra 60 pounds on your frame?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy just to think back like that? Like,
yeah.
Holy
and
shit.
That was only a year ago. It wasn't like it was that long. You know what I mean? But I had to make the step because as I'm getting older, listen, that I'm in a place where it's diabetes, it's heart disease, it's, you know, brain aneurysm. It's something that's going to kill me.
Yeah, man.
I mean? So I got to make sure I got my daughter at home. I want to make sure I'm around for her.
Exactly. And, you know. Same with me, man. My little guy upstairs. I want to make sure I'm around for him.
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of like, you see like the independent scene, especially in this area, you see guys, younger guys. But there's guys that stand out a little bit, like a guy like Ace Romero.
Ace Romero is one of the guys that I love watching because as big as he is, he moves around great. Yeah. And I just put a promo out for that 305 Haas tournament that H2O is having in December. And I talked about guys when I was growing up, you had Bam Bam Bigelow, you had Vader, Dr. Death, Terry Gordy, you had the Head Shrinkers. I mean, all these big dudes that could move, but there wasn't a lot of them.
Yeah.
Everybody was, you know, there was big guys, but they were in shape. These guys were the real big guys, but they weren't just big and sloppy.
Yeah.
They were coming off the top rope. They were doing all kinds of cool moves. And that's the stuff that I saw growing up. And I was like, you know what? I want to be like them. And everything that I did when I got in the ring was kind of like a shout out to them.
Right.
Because, like, I would come off the top like Vader. Because Vader had no fear. And he was a big motherfucker.
Big boy.
I mean, you know, and Bam Bam Bigelow, same thing. And Fatu. Dude, you don't understand. When we got to wrestle the Head Shrinkers, me and Moth, it was such an honor because we both loved the Samoans so much. And they treated us like we were family. You know what I mean? And just how many people do you know get a chance to work with their idols like that?
Right.
And we got a chance, a whole bunch of chances to work with them. So, you know, it was always like, I got to make sure that I let these guys know that I'm shouting them out somehow. So Fatu was me doing the splash off the top. Vader was just Vader strikes in the corner. Bam Bam was just the agile. Anything agile that I did was a shout out to Bam Bam. You know what I mean? That's like one of the things that I, you know, whenever I see a guy like Ace Romero, I'm always like dropping hints of guys who to study. So that way he could work more like them. I would love to see Ace. He is losing weight. I think he lost something like 70 pounds. Right. I would love to see him in better shape, just, you know, cardiovascular reason why, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be like jacked, but get him down to like a Bam Bam size, you know, something where he's got weight, but he can still move. When I was a kid, first person I ever saw do the slingshot from the outside was Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah.
Grabbing on the top and just slingshotting himself in.
What about Jim D'Anvil Neidhart? As big as that guy was.
Yeah. Doing a shoulder tackle. Yeah. Over, yeah.
And he was coming off the top. Dude, how many times he would do a leapfrog with his big beer gut?
He threw drop kicks.
Yeah. Standing drop kicks. Yes. Not even like the, cause I need like a couple of steps to hit my drop kick, but he would just hold the guy's face and then drop kick him right in the jaw. Like, he was awesome. You know what I mean? So, like, I would see stuff like that and it's always like, that's the stuff that stands out to me. When you see guys who, like Rey Mysterio is something special because Rey Mysterio is so tiny. So when you see him in there doing his stuff, it's like, man, that's so cool. When you see Bam Bam Bigelow doing a moonsault or Vader doing a moonsault, that's something cool. Some of the other guys, when they all look the same, well, they all wear kick pads and, you know, the trunks and, you know, it's like, all right, cool. You're in great shape. What makes you stand out? None of these kids know how to stand out. I know how to fight. That's what. That's my way of standing out. Who cares?
Everybody wants to be the tough guy now.
So then go join MMA. Go do that's MMA and see how tough you really are. That's why Matt Riddle stands out. Because everyone knows Matt Riddle could really kick people's ass. And he's a great worker.
But Matt Riddle, he's got the it factor. He's got the look. You know, yeah. He's got the physique. He's got the attitude. He's a
very beautiful man. I don't have no problem saying that.
He's like Kevin Von Erich meets Rob Van Dam. That's what he is.
Fuck. Yeah. That's an awesome description, that Kevin Von Erich. Yeah, no, that's definitely 1,000% true.
Fucking handsome guy. You want to go to the beach, fucking catch a few waves with him?
Maybe toke up with him.
Yeah. And then just kick the shit out of each other.
Probably that's, you and
that's perfect.
He's fucking amazing. He really is.
You got to watch, and I'm not plugging it because it's my company, but you got to watch Kyle the Beast and Matt Riddle from the last JAPW show.
Kyle the Beast is another guy that impresses the fuck out of me.
He really is. He's another guy that I had my hands in. That sounded disgusting. I'm sorry. that I've been a part of grooming over the last couple of years.
Jesus!
And he's somebody that, like, I've known him since he was probably about 15, 16, give or take. But I always knew there was something there about him. He just had a lot of heart when it came to this business. And then he started working out and becoming the animal that he looks like now. And it's like, he's not even close to hitting his prime. He's got such a long way, and he's so damn talented, the kid. And he loves pro wrestling. He has a lot of fun, and I have fun watching him. And that's why the Matt Riddle match was something that I enjoyed, because Matt Riddle pushed him. And he needs more guys like that to bring him up and elevate him and get him seen more. And Matt Riddle, I thank Matt Riddle 1,000 times, because he did that with Kyle, and it was really cool to see.
I saw Kyle took on Falaba, and they're going over the match. He's like, I can get you for the jackhammer. He's like, if you can get me up, fucking Falaba the jackhammer.
He's just so ridiculous strong.
Crazy.
Like sometimes, because I always worry whenever I see him lift certain guys up. I'm like, oh, he's going to blow out his back. You know what I mean? But
well, he's young, too. You know, he's got a few years before he blows his back out, I think.
But still, all it takes is one.
No, I hear you.
Someone to sandbag him, and it's
But you know how it is, bro. He's invincible right now.
Yeah, he is. No, he's definitely seeing some mortality, though, because when I talked to him last, he's like, I'm not going to do that today. And I was like, all right, kid.
That's the other thing, too. I think it's important that guys learn, like, you don't have to do this every night, or you don't have to do this even once in a while. Just break it out when it's a special moment.
Yeah, when you know that there's enough people watching that they're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Or that it means something to the match.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like doing the splash anymore, because obviously coming off the top rope for 20 years, my knees kind of have problems. You know what I mean? But every once in a while, for something special, I'll break it out.
Yeah. Which is the way it should be done.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan's had his hips replaced. You don't think, watching as a kid, he's just dropping a leg, what kind of damage is doing to his ass and his hips and everything.
That's why I look at a guy like Matt Hardy. Even though he was just doing like the second rope leg drop, he did a million of it. I'm like,
yeah.
I wonder what kind of shape he actually is in now.
What about Jeff?
Jeff looked a swanton every fucking night, landing on his ass.
That's a whole different animal.
That's how you get addicted to fucking drugs.
Yeah,
it really is, though.
So is Jeff Hardy a piece of shit?
No. I'm pretty sure he went over for everybody.
Yeah. He's been mad cool every time I've done anything with him. He's one of those guys that doesn't mind talking to the younger guys, too. So, you know, whenever that's how I judge people. If you are willing to talk to the guys that aren't TV talent like you, then you're all right in my book.
Since you had to go and make that stupid comment about Matt Hardy or Jeff Hardy being a piece of shit, please tell me somebody else who forfeited the title because they wanted to fucking go home and be a piece of shit by themselves in their own misery.
You know, I talked to my mom and she said, you don't smile anymore. And I
I'll tell you who forfeited titles.
Yeah, but for the same reasons.
For the Stone Cold Steve Austin. forfeited the Intercontinental belt.
He broke twice. His fucking neck.
No, one time he threw it in the river and told The Rock to go get it because he was challenging Shawn Michaels.
No, but it was The Rock's belt, wasn't it?
No, yes. It was his.
Rock
no,
was the champ.
I think it was The Rock's.
No, he was the champ.
Why would
no.
he throw his own belt no, in the fucking river?
Because he didn't need it anymore. He wanted to get
that's not
you
it at all.
The damn belt, Rock. Go get it.
I don't know. The Attitude Era, they threw like 4,000 belts in the fucking
and then who
river.
Threw the smoke? Someone threw the smoke and skull
The Rock
belt.
Did to get it back at him.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
There was a story, I want to say it was on Jim Cornette's show, where I think it was Stone Cold threw the belt in the river, and it was just some old belt they had up in Stamford. Somebody fished it out of the fucking bay and brought it back, and they're like, do you guys want this? And Jim Cornette was like, no, kid, that's your souvenir.
I would have marked a great souvenir. I would have marked out.
Nobody
hard as
said
hell.
It was a belt. It was like missing a plate. It was
so
all
what?
Scratched up, banged up, and shit.
Still
but still,
it's still a belt.
You still fucking take that?
Of course I would.
In a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
How about that guy that found the old Bruno Sammartino belt in his attic?
And the fucking I know it was his wife. He died. She's like, what the fuck is he doing with this?
And she had no idea. Do you want this for your kids?
Thank God for Dave Millican, and he's like a fucking like true guy that's like loves the history of the business.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a cool dude too. I met him WrestleMania weekend. I was talking to him for a hot second.
That's what I heard. Buddies of ours interviewed him for another show. He's fucking just sounds cool as hell.
He is,
and he knows the business. That's the fucking great thing about him. You know,
mm-hmm. Are you New Orleans bound this year?
I'm trying to, but the problem is my partner just severed ties with Beyond Wrestling, which is somewhere that we would have been working New Orleans.
Well, that's a good segue because somebody wants to know what
happened, the story, whatever you can tell.
Is okay. there a story?
It's not as big as it seems, but so last year we were working for Beyond, and I mean, you guys see everything that's going on. Would it be safe to say that Moff and I were showcase talent, like top main event feature talent for Beyond Wrestling?
I would say so. Right? For a while.
It's hard to, we were definitely the guys that
whenever there was a top team that they were bringing in, or if you needed like a big main event match, that they would come to us and use us, and we would knock it out the park for them.
Matthew?
No, it's fair enough. It's just, it's tough to say because when you look at Beyond, like I think they were one of the groups that goes above and beyond, like trying mm-hmm. to load their shows up.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to say that that we were the only stars, because there's Pazuzu, Dickinson, Jaka, EYFBO, Janelope, and...
As an aside, did you see that somebody, I think it was Mangway, posted the picture of Dickinson with the fucking long flowing black hair today?
Fucking glorious
he was
fucking
a
hair.
Fucking handsome fellow
I
with that long
him,
hair.
I remember him because I've known them since they were like 13, 12 years old. And I remember him with long hair like that and being like, wow, this fucking kid has the, what's his name? Stupid Encino Man.
Oh,
Brendan Fraser. But then I said Jaka looks like when he's the coke dealer in Bedazzle.
Yes.
Like Jaka looks like that. So anyway, going back to Beyond. So
yes.
I would say yes.
Yes.
I would say you guys, I mean, I just pulled up everything from 2016.
Mm-hmm.
EYFBO, Team Tremendous,
yeah. All right,
Gargano
crazy.
Ciampa, Private Party,
War Machine,
Crusade for a Change. War Machine, the American Destroyers, Dijak and Webb.
Yep.
I mean, you've got
the American Wolves. The American Wolves.
Yeah.
So with all that on throughout that whole year, maybe even before that, one, we weren't featured on as many posters and advertisements. Usually we were the guys promoting ourselves and they would promote whoever else. That kind of bothered me a little bit. Because I felt like we were mostly exclusive to Beyond for a long time. So I felt like, well, if we committed to you that way, you should have committed to us. And I'm not saying that they didn't, like they were jerks to us or anything like that. Because we had a good relationship. We still can. All we got to do is talk. You know what I mean? But that was one of the things that first started. Then another thing that happened was, if you look at our record, I think we're like 11-19 at Beyond Wrestling. 11 wins and 19 losses. And we're still being one of the featured teams, right? That means that we're doing our job good enough that we lose if people don't give a shit. They right, still just right. want to see us, right? Now, it's pro wrestling. You don't care who wins or loses. But every once in a while, you kind of throw in a surprise, and it just felt like they never were doing that. They just wanted – and I will say we kind of got surprised when we went over Elgin and Cage WrestleMania weekend. We were very surprised, and I was grateful. But, you know, there was a whole bunch of stuff that happened, and eventually it just – Moff just lost his mind. And he was pissed off about a lot of things. He'd been holding it in. And I knew he was pissed. Even though me and him, we've been not having a fallout, but we just haven't been talking as much, you know. But I knew that he was mad about a lot of things. He knew I was mad about a lot of things. But we just keeping it business. And then we saw that for the rest of the year, we weren't going to get booked on any of the Beyond shows. And we just had to put over the Hate Club. And nothing against Nick Gage or Nate Hatred, but that was the first time they teamed up in like 12 years.
Right. Nick hasn't been around for a long time.
Well, but Nick is on fire right now. Yeah, that's the thing. Nate hasn't done jack. And Nate was on fire that match that we wrestled him. That was a match that really could have gone any which way. But in reality, it should have went our way. But whatever. You do what you're supposed to do. But I think the thing that really broke the camel's back was not being on any of the shows for the rest of the year. Now, I don't know if it's we have heat with somebody. I'm being told we don't have heat with anybody. I mean, before, you know, the whole thing with Moff.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it looks like we have heat with somebody, that we pissed somebody off, because for us to not be on any of the shows, it's kind of like, wow, that sucks. You know what I mean? So, like I said, it's something that can definitely be worked. As long as we talk and we're civil, and we've always, no matter how pissed I've been at Drew, and it's not that much, not like I'm, you know, I've always been able to talk to him the next time I saw him, and we right. were able to work things out. And there's been like two or three times where we, you know, I left the show mad, and then the next time I saw him, we talked it out and we were good. So it really should be that way the next time we see him, but to be honest, I don't know.
When the next time is?
The next time we're going right. to see him, yeah. So, you know, and like I said, we, that show, a game changer. I left. We were hugging, shaking his hands. You know, I was shaking his hands. I actually didn't see Moff leave. Moff was already gone. I know he was upset about the whole Hate Club thing. And then, you know, he definitely took it to heart when he saw a couple of people that were on posters that really not as good. I don't want to say not as good, because everybody who works for Beyond is really good.
Right.
But people that he felt shouldn't be on
like,
a poster.
If you see a Beyond poster, you are quicker to associate the Hit Squad with Beyond versus yes. me and Kevin.
Yes.
Right. Well, yeah.
yeah. Right. And yeah. that was the thing. But see, I understood it as they're trying to get new talent in and put over new talent. And I get that. You know what I mean? But to not have us on any of the shows for the rest of the year when you have like three or four of them, we should have been on at least one, and we're not. So you're right. telling me from September or October, whenever that Game Changer show was, till January maybe? We're right. not going to be on any shows. That's a long time to not be on any shows.
Of course. And like you mentioned before, going back to the whole Impact situation, you guys have families. You can't just pick up and go. Like yeah. these bookings, they're important to you guys. Mm-hmm. And if you're not getting booked, then you got to scoop yeah. something up.
And they're starting a new deal with Powerbomb TV. That means more exposure. That means more money. You know what I mean? So you kind of want to be like, well, you would want to showcase this and have people watch the show more, and then we could get a little money off of it. You could get a lot of money off of it.
Right. Everybody's and everybody happy. Wins. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, it's one of those things where time will tell. We just need to talk and whatever. Moff needs to cool off. Drew needs to cool off. Me, I'm whatever. You know what I mean? I got so much other stuff between Jersey All Pro and home. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, of course.
I'm like, all right, whatever. We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah. And you mentioned Jersey All Pro before we started recording. What's your role there?
So now I'm kind of like the Jim Ross of the group, where I'm searching for
Kevin,
talent.
Can you shut the door so he doesn't have a half a stroke face?
Oh, Jesus.
So you know I did have Bell's palsy.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Oh, fuck! Me.
Wait a minute. Go I gotta play the worst one you can.
God. I don't have my glasses on.
Play the meanest
Did he need a timeout?
I failed. Jesus, Steve, I'm sorry. That was awkward.
Listen, it'll never beat your wife saying, stroke.
Oh, stroke.
Yep.
Dummy. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
God.
No, but yeah.
God, I hate myself.
It's all good. It's all good. I,
That's right.
I've been...
Matt, shut your mic off.
That came out of his mouth.
That was a good one, though. That was a good one. I've been... Because I'm all around, all the time, I've been searching talent and watching and whatever and bringing them in. And, you know, there's a group of guys who do the booking, and I just try to just show them which guys we should book and whatever. And then, like, with Worldwide, I was doing a lot of the promoting, producing with Matram. And, you know, just trying to get new faces into the company and, you know, keep a fresh new look and still keeping it Jersey All-Pro as much as possible.
And how often are you guys running shows? Every couple, 4 or 6 months?
So we're looking to do one every season. The reason being is... It doesn't make sense to run every month when there's so many companies.
Right.
But if you build up and you use vehicles like Worldwide, where you promote new talent, new faces, and, you know, keep your angles fresh or whatever, you know, you should be able to draw. Now, we kind of got hammered that last show because there was 12 other shows running the same day.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And we still, I mean, we still drew 250, but for Jersey All-Pro, 250 is pretty bad.
Okay. Right.
But it was, you know, it was understood once we found out how many shows were running in the area. We were like, listen, we're going to take a hit, but rather than cancel, let's just go forward and then we'll build on it. So we had a bunch of things. Like I said, we had Kyle and Matt Riddle. That was the match of the night to me.
Right.
And then you had Black G's and Keith Lee. They killed it. And, you know, there was a new stable born out of that. The Cartel stable with Homicide, Joker. G's has some influence. Julius Smokes is there. Then you had Jonathan Gresham and Arcadia. That match was phenomenal. And you had TJ Marconi and Joe Gacy. That match was great. I mean, there wasn't a bad match at all. And, you know, everybody was there was talking about they loved the show and how great it was. So, you know, I feel like we did what we needed to do to make sure that when we run in February, things will pick up and be better.
You said 12 shows that night.
Mm-hmm.
It goes bigger picture. Do you think there's way too many people trying to run shows these days?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Because everybody wants to play with their action figures. Yeah. Nobody wants to do anything with them.
And that's the thing, because, like, you know, it just seems like it's the same guys having the same matches 17 times a month.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point?
Yeah, and that was one of the things when we were talking about Jersey All-Pro. We wanted to have a lot of first-time matches. Every single match, with the exception, I think, one, was a first-time match on Jersey All-Pro. And every match had somebody debut in it. You know what I mean? So that was my goal, was to make sure that in everything that we did, that, all right, this is not going to be just Homicide and the Hit Squad and Low Key again. This is going to be all new guys. You're going to see Arcadia. You're going to see Kyle the Beast. You're going to see Black G's. They're all going to have featured roles. They're all going to be main event status. Every once in a while, if we have to, or if there's somebody who is building enough steam, we'll bring in a Low Key. We'll bring in the Hit Squad. We'll bring in whoever from the old days that's still relevant now and can still go, because it'll mean something to the JAP fans. But I really want to build a new base of guys and girls that not only can they fight, but they could tell a good story, whether it be in the ring or in the back on the mic. I want to make sure that we have people that know and understand and are willing to learn how to be better at this.
A few years ago, Shane Douglas had a few people that he tried bringing back, Extreme Rising and, mm-hmm. with, you know, the Extreme promotion. And Eddie and I went to the first show out in North Philly, and they had a lot of the younger guys on the show too. Black G's was on the show, mm-hmm. quite a few of those guys from Combat Zone Wrestling, and they were amazing. But I think overall, the people that went there expected, we wanted to see everybody from ECW. this is fine, but it's not what we came to see. Mm-hmm. Do you find that's the same feeling when it's having Jersey All Pro shows now, where it's like, yeah, we kind of like these new guys, but we want to see the Hit Squad. We want to see Low Key. We want to see Homicide. Do you see that at all? And is it tough trying to strike that balance introducing new guys against that?
So on the last show, Homicide was the only – Homicide and Arcadia, because Arcadia has been with the company. A lot of people don't realize it's going on 12 years, I think it is, 13 years. But Homicide and Arcadia are the only two veterans of JAP. And a lot of people hit me up saying that they were very happy with how the show went and every bit of talent that they saw. So for me, it wasn't like, all right, maybe we got to try a little harder to build these. I felt like everything went at the perfect pace. People responded the way we wanted them to respond. Just we didn't have the size of the crowd that we wanted. But the one thing I will say that I noticed, the two times my music hit and when Homicide's music hit, the place erupted. So that means that there's a lot of people that still want to see, you know, the old guys. But at the same time, they're a lot more willing to accept the newer guys because the new guys have talent and they're good. Go. So and that's why we have it's February 24th. We're going to have the Hit Squad there. I have no idea what we're doing yet because I just I've really been focused on so much other stuff. And, you know, I wanted to give a little break from JAP because we've been going at this since May. And from May to October, it's been all JAP business for me. So I just want to have a little bit of break, enjoy my family, just enjoy. I got myself a PlayStation VR, and that's like the greatest fucking shit. If you guys haven't seen it, you need to try it out.
I've seen it, but awesome. But so tell us about that. We might as well go off on a tangent.
Yeah, yeah.
It's worth the hype?
Yeah, definitely. Get Resident Evil, get Gran Turismo, and get Until Dawn, Rush of Blood. Those three games alone, you'll be sitting for hours. So Resident Evil, first time I got it, played 2 hours. I was sick. I had motion sickness.
Well, that's what I mean. That's a scary fucking game.
No, it's so fucking great though. Like it's so awesome. Dude, there's one scene where you're in this house and you go down these stairs and you can't see the steps and all of a sudden this fucking thing starts climbing up your way and you still jump. You know what I mean? Like and then as long as you have really good headphones, because that's the other thing too. When you have the headphones and the goggles, you immerse yourself totally into the game because there was one of the scenes that got me really nauseous was there's a flooded basement. So you're walking through the water and the water's like right at eye level and it's so trippy. And, it's so awesome what they're doing with this. You know what I mean? And then like Gran Turismo, I was driving, a Nissan GTR and I hit like 200 miles an hour and it felt like I was driving a car doing 200 miles an hour.
Now, how does that work? You just put your hands in front of you? You got like
With the racing, you have the controller. With, Until Dawn, Rush of Blood, you have the light up sticks and, it recognizes the lights and you see your hands shooting the gun. It's so fucking awesome. So fucking, and then it's like a roller coaster, tycoon type game on the PlayStation Store. You could ride the rides in VR mode and it's so fucking awesome, dude.
I hate roller coasters.
Oh, no, dude. I put my father-in-law is a 70-year-old man and I put him on the roller coaster. He was like, I had to close my eyes. I was getting sick.
when I went to Disney the year I proposed to my wife, said, I don't like fucking roller coasters. I don't like any of this shit. I'll hold bags. I'll fucking people watch. Oh, we gotta go early. We're gonna go Harry Potter World.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. We're in line. We're going through.
Oh, Harry Potter's awesome.
Make sure you don't have any loose clothes on, no hats. I'm like, what the fuck am I in line for? And I'm like, fuck this. We waited 45 minutes. She's like, you'll be fine. I'm like, this is all this fucking vacation is going to be. I'm done. Go back to fuck.
You went to Orlando. What the fuck did you think was going
to
happen?
I wanted to see fucking Impact Wrestling and fucking propose to my fucking girlfriend. And fucking get drunk in Epcot. I didn't want to go on fucking roller coasters. Oh, that Harry Potter stuff scared the shit out of me.
Let me tell you something. I went.
Fuck that.
I went back in the spring. We went to Universal. We went to Disney, Epcot, all of them, the Hollywood Studios. I was okay on almost everything. almost everything. The shit that spins really fast, thank God they don't have too many of them, mm-hmm. that's the stuff that really fucks me up.
The Gravitron?
Yeah, shit yeah. like that. Or like when you're in the pod and the pod is spinning while the mm-hmm. whole thing is going the opposite direction, fuck that. The teacups get me fucking sick as an idiot.
Fucking teacups.
Dude, I went on the Simpsons motion ride. It was like crash and bang and everything. That shit didn't bother me.
I like that one.
What?
The motion rides?
Yeah.
I don't mind those.
No, they're not bad. But that fucking teacups, that fucks me up every time.
Nah, that shit where my feet are dangling.
Oh, all right. So let me tell you a true story. There used to be a place in Orlando. It was like off the main strip where all the hotels used to be before Disney started building all their own shit. Mm-hmm. There was a place across the street from when I stood as a kid called Wet n Wild. It was the fucking water park. Mm-hmm. So my wife and I, years later, were on a cruise. They're like, oh, you spend the day Port Canaveral, you can go wherever. So we went to Wet n Wild. They got this fucking harness. You're strapped back to back. You each have a fucking fire hose strapped to your chest.
All right.
And the idea is to go like a pendulum. One turns on the hose and the other turns it off. And you fucking swing back and forth. We went to KFC across the street. We came back to the park and we fucking got right on this ride. We yacked fucking fried chicken everywhere. Me and Margie were in the bushes fucking throwing up like two idiots.
Why are you going on a roller coaster after eating fried chicken?
No, it was
chicken?
A fucking pendulum, dude. Well, it was a garden hose.
Does it sound like this?
No, it was more like this.
That's a good one. I don't have that one over here.
I'm going to throw up right now.
In your face.
That's right. That's me.
We are here in studio with the modest one, Mr. Monster Mac.
The modest one?
Yeah, he was very modest about his career.
He's very humble.
Yeah, well, I modest, humble, whatever.
I thought you were going to make like a Mike Modest reference.
I was tempted to, but I didn't want to upset the man because he's much better than Mike Modest,
actually,
I think. There you go.
Who was Christopher Daniels' partner in Ring of Honor?
Kazarian.
No. Both in the beginning, was it Mike Modest?
Was it? All right, Google.
No, Donovan. Donovan Morgan, right?
Donovan. Yeah, that sounds more familiar. Yeah,
Donovan Morgan. Yeah. No,
the Google machine.
I was about to say, I think I hate Mike Modest because they won the tag belts and we didn't.
Mike Modest was in Beyond the Mat.
No, Mike Modest is cool. He's a cool dude. Actually, all of them are cool. I'm just joking around.
I always wondered who that other guy was in Beyond the Mat.
The black guy?
Yeah.
Shelton Benjamin.
No.
They do not all look alike.
Well, kind of.
Yeah, get him. Get him. No. Get him.
Wow. Get him, Donovan Mac. Morgan, you were right.
Yeah, Donovan.
See, Morgan. He knows his shit. What are you talking about?
Now I'll
Yeah, no, it, I mean, everyone expected us to win the tag belts in the beginning of Ring of Honor, and that didn't happen. So a lot of people were like, what the fuck? But Daniels and Morgan did pretty good with the tag
Tony
belts.
Jones.
Tony
that was
Jones.
Him, Tony Jones.
Yeah, Tony.
Tony Jones.
Jim Ross told him to work on his pecs.
Who's the one that almost dropped the other one on their head when even Vince was like, oof?
Tony Jones.
No. D'Lo Brown.
No.
Oh, Jesus Christ, dude.
Fuck. Damn it.
Holy cow.
What the fuck?
That's on a tear.
So is D'Lo Brown a piece of shit?
No, D'Lo Brown's not a piece of shit. Shawn Michaels is a piece of shit.
You're looking at the real deal.
He's going to puke!
Oh, God.
Kevin's disgusted. He's tapping out.
I'm done.
How's that devil's game?
Correct! Ding!
Oh, God. Steve Mack in studio hitting Kevin below the belt.
Oh, it's not a below the belt. I don't give a fuck. I love the devils.
He doesn't give a fuck now, but we're going to get some weird fucking text messages at like 11:30 after the fucking Jameson shots.
That's true.
You guys are fucking jerks.
You think Steve really hates me?
Yeah.
Me and Steve have heat. Yeah.
You've gotten a Kevin Facebook message. I'm impressed.
That's exactly how I am. Then I wake up in the morning, I'm like, what the fuck did I say?
What's wrong? I'm a fucking idiot. I'm a fucking idiot.
I'm stupid.
I'm a fucking idiot.
Stupid, fuck! Sensitive, fuck, pussy, motherfucker.
Fuck. Oh.
You want to just kiss me, maybe?
Oh, you idiot.
Oh, you.
Coming.
God, that was disgusting. Those are all my play all mine that have my voice
you
attached
all
to them.
In a row?
I feel like you did this a couple weeks ago.
It makes Kevin feel better.
No,
that's a good one.
That's the best one.
That's why. All right, let me paint the picture for you because I want to.
Oh, here we go.
Tony had his kid down here. This is, I don't know how long ago, 2 years ago. And Tony just had the kid's foot. Just had his son's foot in his mouth.
Ah.
Like, exactly.
Yuck.
Isolate that. Do that again.
Ah. There you go.
Yuck. I'm sitting in your seat like I'm supposed to just pretend that's okay. And so those were my natural, honest to God reactions.
Shut the fuck up.
And that's what happened.
Fuck it.
And feet, I dare anyone else to disagree with me on that.
I could never be a foot fetish guy.
Oh, like, fuck. So thank you.
I was biting my kid's foot. It's not like
No. I know, but I'm just saying, like my daughter, she's 4 years old, and she's like, here, daddy, smelly feet. Look at my smelly feet. And I'm like, keep them away, please. Damn. And she does it to piss me off. She intentionally does it. And I'm like, nah, you got to chill.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I don't fuck with feet.
Yeah, no. Me
neither. And like, he's playing it down, dude. He had that fucking foot in
his mouth. Dude, most, he's my kid. What,
yeah, that's how it starts.
Yeah.
Then you're putting little dicks in your mouth.
You know what you need?
Don't. Please don't feed the beast.
No. You need the one. What is it? That you play during Jerry Springer? That's the fire in my brain!
Yes.
Stabbing me! Agony!
What?
It's Jitty. From an old movie or something like that, I think.
I'll take it. Let's find it.
I like turtles.
That's my favorite drop.
I like turtles.
That's my, like, beyond my
is
favorite.
Is that the
drop.
Opie drop? Because he used to use that a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit balls. You are listening live on rantemradio.com. What?
That's right.
What, really?
We just joined the Lollipop Guild.
See, now Matt will insult me, tell him, oh, you're too much with the soundboard, but he's fucking, I don't know what the
We have a guest. He requested this. So,
what the fuck is that?
It's 2 minutes long.
All right.
What the fuck is it?
Olympics. Doctor, he seems to be getting worse instead of better.
It's the sound clip. I just got to find it.
I like it.
Sounds like Moff after he got dropped.
Creeping through my veins. Pouring in my blood. Oh, darts of fire in my brain.
Jesus!
You fucking played over. The worst. The fucking worst. God.
That's awesome.
Wait, play it again.
I'm not playing it again.
2 minutes long. No, seriously, I want to hear it. Go ahead.
No.
No.
By the way, am I the only one that thinks Mickey James still looks hotter now?
I'd still give her a slap at the roast beef sandwich.
Oh, Jesus.
No, you're not the only one.
Okay. I was looking at her the other day.
She's
and
so
like,
much hotter than that
she
fucking
looks
Nia
so
Jax.
Much better now. Than when she was hot in her prime. Like, not in her prime. I mean, like, hot when I knew her in Ring of Honor days. Like,
you know what it is, dude? You're an older guy. She's an older woman. Like,
true.
Your taste changed.
I like
bro.
The Cougars.
There
I like
you go.
The Cougars.
That's right.
Martha Stewart, if you're listening, I'll be your sugar baby.
There Kelly's going to go to the barn tag some old ladies now tonight.
Martha Stewart
he knows what it's
and
call
Helen,
me Kelly.
Helen Mirren. Oh, Helen Mirren. Right,
yeah, she's a looker.
British Cougar.
Who's all right, I have to look her up.
Yeah.
What is it?
She Helen Mirren.
She a porn star?
No, but she was in Caligula.
Hey, that'll do now. It. Enough said.
Still gorgeous.
There you go, bag that still looks hot.
Oh, I know her.
Yeah.
She was at the Hat last night.
Is Florence Henderson still alive or she died?
No, she gone.
She died.
She gone.
Everybody's dying.
Jesus.
That's the crazy thing about 2016. Everybody's like, oh my God, all these people died. This year, everybody's dying, but the story's like, well, he was 85, or he was 95, or he was 105.
You can't live to be fucking forever.
Well, I understand. It's just a different sentiment when people die in this shit.
You know
it's
what
like,
kills me, though? When people death. Are like, he was 80 years old, yes. Death is the number one killer in America.
The number one cause of death in this country is death.
Correct. Ding.
When people are like, he was 80. He was so young. No, he's not. He's fucking old. He's 80. Fucking he lived his life.
Listen, I'm with you.
Yeah, 80.
Like if I make
old.
It to 60, I'll be good. Yeah,
you know what the sad thing is? Like I'm more than halfway to 80. That just fucking depressed the shit out of me.
Yeah. That's a long time now. You good?
Is.
You're not going to make it.
I'll be real. I'll be, you know, I've already made fun of him for having Bell's palsy, even though I didn't know he had it. You'll be dead in a week, so
that
is what it is. Sure.
Give me a little credit.
It won't be like
Well, good. It'll ruin your birthday forever. It's the fucking day Tony died. Hey, listen, the day you were born.
It won't be like Anthony's September 11th birthday, but it'll do.
Knock on wood, if that does happen in a week, will Margie let us, like, take the podcast stuff?
And can we take our half a wall of fame?
Yeah, yeah. I'll put it in a will.
See, look, did you put the Hit Squad back up there?
No, they were on. They were on. They were
no,
on.
I put them up 3 weeks ago when I put that back up.
All
two
of
weeks
it.
Ago.
You see all the nails over there, Steve. There were more pictures.
No, I remember there was a lot more.
But he had to trim the fat, so. Yeah.
He was thinking about putting a TV over there.
I still am. There's a TV stand over there. I got the TV I fixed in the back.
So the Wall of Fame is going to be no more?
I don't know. It's still there.
I'm just glad that it's the Hit Squad and not Moth, because I know Moth is like a 30-time veteran of the show.
Wow, we love Moth.
Well, which is why we had you here. We're trying to catch your number.
Trying to catch me up.
Of course, man.
Yeah. No, but like, you know, he's always like complaining that I don't put him over enough, but he's done this show more times than anybody.
Hey, right. He left you off of Monday Night Raw, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, motherfucker.
And usually he starts really, really low and slow. He's like, and I am on The Shining Wizards.
Oh, are you making fun of Moff?
Look, Dan, I got a bone to pick with Danny Moff.
He wanted to do this last
yeah,
week.
Right,
First of all,
we gotta let him just...
This fucking WrestlePro bullshit, okay? He was fucking anti-WrestlePro. They had the fucking stage set. He should have brought in Steve to fucking rip the whole fucking place apart. He brings in Homicide, which is... And he won it 6 dozen here, half a dozen the other, whatever the fucking saying is. They're pretty much the same person. They're both fucking badasses. Although
he brought.
Yeah, he brought.
He was there.
Yeah, you were after Homicide, right?
Well,
the same night.
When Homicide was the surprise partner, I came in at the end.
Right, you should have been the surprise partner. Yeah. And don't fucking question my Scott Steiner math, okay? I know that's what you're going to do there with your fucking Walgreens glasses.
Was the sage set?
The sage was set. Then.
Oh, Jesus.
The motherfucking, he has this huge feud with fucking Pat Buck. And then they hug it out. And now he's in some fucking stupid Survivor Series match where he's friends with everybody again. Fucking horseshit.
He earned the respect back.
Oh, he earned the mutual respect back. He should have never had to earn anyone's respect. He's fucking Danny Moff.
Listen, sometimes a hug is all you need.
Yeah. See, that's probably why he got collateral damage with Beyond, because he was fucking pissed off at WrestlePro. Now, unfortunately, Beyond's taking the heat.
Well, both of us booked this for WrestleMania weekend this year, so I can't really complain about either one of them.
That's
really.
Right.
But, I'm the I was on Team Moff, and now I feel like
he betrayed you, is what you're saying.
He's not.
Well, he got should soft. Be on Team Moff, because a couple years ago he took a right punch to the face.
Actually,
thanks to Dan Moff.
Weren't you getting chopped last time I was
here? I did get chopped.
No, he got chopped, but he was part of a pull apart brawl. With Moff and Falaba a few years ago, and while he was in the middle of breaking it up, Moff threw a fucking right cross over the top and clocked him in the side of the head.
Wow. Threw my hat off too.
It's all in a day's work.
I had my kid in the bleachers, and fucking Jewisaurus is next to me. He's like, "Yo, move the kid, move the kid, move the." He's like, "The kid's gonna get run over. Get the fuck out of here."
It's all good.
That was good times.
Hey, real quick, I just checked my Facebook. And Homicide just asked me to mention that this Thursday, the Compound is having their open school, which is a school that he's running with Nick Gage.
Yes.
Nice.
And he wanted me to shout him out. So check out his Facebook. It's under D-D-E-E, Erazo. It has all the information. You can check out Nick Gage's Facebook. He has all the information. And Game Changer Wrestling.
It is under Game Changer. That's what I thought.
Homicide does not want it to be under Game Changer.
Okay, never mind. I take it back.
No. No, it is a Game Changer venture.
Homicide, Nick Gage this Thursday.
Yeah, I'll be down there too to hang out.
That is.
If the ring is open, I'll probably get in the ring.
110 Harmon Drive, Unit 306, Blackwood, New Jersey, 08012.
So why's it got to be Blackwood?
If you have any questions, email them, gamechangerwrestling@yahoo.com. Again, this Thursday night, 7 o'clock, open house at the compound with Homicide and Nick Gage.
Yeah.
I can't think of two guys that you wouldn't want to learn from.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know what's crazy? Nick Gage, obviously, he's the deathmatch zombie, I guess you would say. I call him a zombie because the dude died and came back to life.
Very good point.
So he's a zombie, and sounds you can't like kill him right now. But he's actually a really great wrestler, and a lot of people don't know that because he does a lot of deathmatch stuff. But, you know, I mean, when you're in there with him and you're talking about a match and talk about wrestling, he knows his stuff, Nick Gage, but he's such a legit badass that people are afraid to even talk to him about anything. So, you know, but he's definitely going to be one of those guys. I mean, you guys saw what he looked like before he went in. He came out looking like an absolute monster. And that's going to be part of his deal is the weightlifting part of the school. He's going to be in charge of that. Homicide will be most of the in-ring stuff. I mean, Homicide trained us. He trained Low-Key, trained a lot of guys. I think his track record speaks for himself.
Right.
You know, and, you know, he's definitely one of my favorite people to learn wrestling about from over all the years that I've been in this business. Whenever I talk to Homicide about wrestling, it's just, he speaks my language. So if it works for me, I'm pretty sure it could work for anybody.
Giddy up. Sounds good to me.
He's fucking amazing too. Like I'm thinking of the match I called with him and that fucking asshole from Staten Island. What a fucking amazing thing he did with that kid.
Oh, the kid toucher?
Yeah.
Oh.
That was such a great match too, you know? Like
Survivor Series this Sunday.
There is a big weekend of wrestling. NXT is Saturday night, the Houston Takeover. And
that's
then
the War Games. War Games, yes.
Hey, is Piece of Shit refereeing a match that
That's
night?
Friday night.
Oh, okay.
As they run against Ring of Honor.
Ooh.
Wait, what?
Yeah, well, I missed that too.
Yeah, I missed that reference.
Piece of Shit, Shawn Michaels. Is refereeing the Adam Cole, Drew McIntyre match.
In San Antonio. That's why he's doing it.
God, I'm glad someone pays attention to what's going on.
No, because we were talking about another
show.
Piece of shit. And
I thought there was an actual person that was a piece of shit. Like,
yeah, Shawn Michaels.
No, he's an Italian guy. His name is Pizza Shit.
Thank you.
Somebody laughed.
No, come on. Yeah. That was
good.
Don't encourage
that. Was Henny Youngman.
Hey,
you know what I'm saying?
I'm a piece of shit.
You idiots.
I don't know what Kevin's doing.
That was like the worst of the worst.
You're going to steal that for your next gig.
I'm not touching that.
Hey, guys, I was doing a show and this guy's name was Pizza Shit. Am I right?
Take my wife, please. Yeah.
That wasn't my wife. That was my luggage.
No, what's the joke?
No respect.
What's the Rodney joke? Yeah, I tell you what. This is how ugly I am. I stuck my head out the car window and I got a ticket for mooning.
See, why couldn't you say that? That was good.
Because he said piece of shit. That was the joke. Forget it.
I can't believe we're still talking about this.
Thank you.
Holy moly. Did we talk about it last week, how Ring of Honor is bringing in fucking that dude from Arrow?
Steve Amell?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bringing the guy that everybody shit all over when he fucking wrestled on Raw, right?
That just goes to show Cody's pull, man. Cody's got that serious pull.
You know what? I follow Steve Amell on Facebook. He's a fucking funny dude. He seems like a genuine nice guy. So more power to him.
Yeah, congratulations, Steve Amell.
Congratulations.
And you're a superhero.
You made it, kid.
Now you can work Ring of Honor.
There you go.
There you go.
They're pulling out all the stops, bro.
That show sold out,
though. They need to.
Absolutely.
But see, this is the thing what I was saying before. Ring of Honor has a lot of guys that look the same. How many times do you want to see the same guys wearing kick pads and blue and yellow or red and black or white and black, and it's all the same design and it's all the same super kick and it's all the same forearm over and over? And yeah, I get it. Like, they make contact so that, oh, wow, he really hit him. That's cool. But you know what? Eventually the guy's going to break his arm or break his neck or break something else. And then what do you have left? Part of the reason why Ring of Honor had a downslide for a little while was because a lot of guys were getting hurt and they couldn't hang. It wasn't that they couldn't hang, it's that they were hurt. You know what I mean? And they were being sloppy about their stuff. They all wanted to, man, this is strong style. And I love strong style. I helped bring strong style to the States. You know what I mean? But at the same time, we were doing it a different way. We weren't trying to kill each other. We were just trying to tell a story. There's a difference. And a lot of those guys didn't get that.
For we mentioned Beyond before, and obviously you guys worked Ring of Honor, and you've worked a bunch of independent places.
We started Ring of Honor.
Where do you stand?
I don't like to fucking announce that, but we started Ring of Honor.
Where do you stand on the apron bumps?
Stupid. I yell at Joey Janela all the time. Joey Janela is going to do whatever the hell Joey Janela wants to do. I like Joey Janela. I enjoy watching him wrestle. I do not like watching him take stupid bumps.
He's got to make
like
better
that.
Decisions. He's fucking exactly. much better than the shit he's been doing.
Listen, like, so even though he's got a ton of heat on him right now, Lio Rush and Joey Janela were in the same exact position, parallel. I mean, they couldn't be any more parallel than what those two guys were doing, right? Lio Rush was able to use his connections and get a contract, so he's not going to kill himself anymore. Janela still wants to do that stuff, what he should be looking to get on TV or do international with Japan. Europe is cool, and he's in Europe right now, but he really should be looking to go to Japan, Mexico, make money off of this. Don't just – and I'm sure he's making money. I'm not saying he's not, but he really needs to, like, step up to the next level for him. You know what I mean? He's in a comfortable spot, and – you know, he really should be doing something more before his body gives out on him because he keeps doing all these stupid things. Brandon Kirk is a young up-and-coming kid, right? He was supposed to wrestle for Jersey All-Pro. Night before, he calls me. I had talked to him a bunch of times not to do any more of the crazy stuff, any of the crazy bumps. Night before, he takes a leapfrog or something onto a chair, blew out his back, couldn't wrestle for Jersey All-Pro. When you miss opportunities like that, not that Jersey All-Pro is going to make you millions, but you never know what could happen at JAP. And or not just JAP, anywhere.
Right, you could get in the you could work a match and someone could be in the back and go,
exactly.
That kid's good, and then you just got a month's worth of bookings just for showing up.
Yeah, and Janela, like, he's in a really great spot because the whole world is watching everything that he does. And instead of elevating his game to the next level, I think he's content with being where he's at and not going higher. And like, I'm not shitting on Janela. I hope he doesn't think that. I hope anyone else thinks that. I really am a huge fan of Joey Janela. Dude, to the point where every time me and Moff are in the car together going to Beyond, we will blast his entrance music like 30 times in a row because it's such an awesome song to listen to with the volume all the way up. You know what I mean?
And you're not the only one because his name constantly comes up on this show. It seems like every week there's not one conversation that doesn't involve Joey Janela. You know what I mean? Like a show doesn't happen without at least one conversation.
Do you think it's
Joey
that
Janela.
He kind of has his own freedom? Like he's going to do another Joey Janela spring break and he did an apron spot over in Europe and someone shared it and Jim Cornette commented on it on Twitter. Of course, it wasn't positive, but.
Yeah, but Cornette also mentioned him with the whole Lio Rush thing. On the Cornette experiences.
The powerbomb.
Yeah.
Yeah, the powerbomb. And I know the Zandig thing, Cornette shit all over that too.
Off the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, this is the thing. If Janela does his career up to the point where they do the Zandig bump, and then from that point, he makes a right or left, and he takes his career somewhere else. Because at that point, that's what made him. That's what made him his name famous or synonymous or whatever you want to call it. That's what made his name big. He had to do something else. But instead, he started doing more of the chair bumps, more of the apron bumps, and more of the stuff that in the long term is going to shorten his career. When he could have a good 25 to 30 year career, let's just say, right? Instead, he might have a 15-year career.
Right.
You know, and it shouldn't be that way because he's a very entertaining guy. He has it. Whatever it is, dude, I've stood in the ring as he's coming out in Beyond and watched, and I got hype. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it because he has that thing that you want to watch him and you want to see what he's going to do. You know what I mean? And I think part of it is that pressure of I've got to top the last time I was in the ring, what I'm going to do, what I'm going to bring, what's going to be different, what's going to stand out, what is going to be viral. You know what I mean? The most viral thing in our match was Moff spearing Penelope.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't anything he did, but, you know.
And it's crazy because a lot of these, someone like Joey Janela, who's a student of the game, he's a wrestling fan, you would think, you know, you grew up, you watched Mick Foley, and you watch, you know, unfortunately, it seems like every 6 months, someone from ECW is passing away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Mick Foley has had hundreds of surgeries. You know, he's getting another hip replacement, and he can barely walk. You would imagine that, you know, he doesn't want he wants the fame, but he doesn't want that. He doesn't want to be, you know, 37, 38.
He felt it, though, with that Zandig bump. He had to miss something like 3 or 4 months with his surgery on his thumb.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So he knows that what the cost is of doing stupid shit. You know what I mean? For him, that was – for us, it's not necessary. But for him, that was something that was necessary. You know what I mean? Because he grew up idolizing CZW and stuff like that. So he felt he needed to get on that level. Right. But
And I have no problem making that splash per se, just because – just in the general terms of making a splash. No problem with that. But I think you hit the nail on the head. And even when you were going through – what he was saying about his matches since then, I have to do something to top it. I have to do something to stand out. I have to do something to do this. No problem with any of that. And then you hit the nail on the head. I have to do something that goes viral. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing where I think people are missing the boat. Even though it's 2017 and clicks and likes and views gets you there, but I think that takes away from what wrestling is all about in the first place.
That's why Pro Wrestling Guerrilla is the top company in the States right now.
And don't get it. I don't want anyone out there thinking like we love Joey.
Joey's a great dude.
I love great Joey.
And Joey is super talented. Yeah, and I think that's the reason why we're expressing ourselves this way, because I want to see
Joey Janela
on NXT and WWE TV.
I've told him firsthand that I want to see him on TV. I don't want to see him. When he wrestled Teddy Hart and he had his face all bruised up, the next day we were in Beyond. And I said to him, I was like, bro, I never want to see you like this again. This disturbs me. And I've done some crazy shit. But seeing his face cut up and black and blue and his eyes were black and like, why? Why do you need to do that?
Do you have any moments in your younger career that you look back on and say, wow, it wasn't worth it? Like, are you like the Joey Janela? Like, are you your future Janela? Just say right now. Like, you're looking back. What do you look back on in your younger career that you may have regretted doing?
So there's a couple of things. One was not yelling at Gabe and getting in his face and getting fired from Ring of Honor. But the other thing was in Jersey All-Pro and Bayonne, I had did a spot where we set up a ladder on the apron and on the guardrail, and we had 4 chairs on the floor, and I went to powerbomb Dixie off the ladder, and I'm 1,000% positive that's where all my back injuries stem from. Wow. Like, I went straight through, like, a hot knife through butter, and to the point where it was one of those where I'm pretty sure I cracked my tailbone, but Moff always laughs at me. When I hit, it instantly felt like I shit myself.
Nice.
And everything just hurt. And I just crawled under the ring because it was the last thing I had to do. I crawled under the ring and I was like,
I don't mean to laugh.
It's but no, funny. It was funny though. Yeah. I laugh at it. I don't give a fuck. But Moff said he looked and he was like, I knew you were fucked, but I couldn't stop laughing. But like, I blew out my knee that night. My back, my lower back has been a mess ever since. And I'm pretty sure that's where everything that's happened with my lower back stems from. So that's one thing that I definitely regret it. And that was in 2001 or 2002 that happened.
So without sounding like too cliche, and again, this is a follow-up to that, like, what advice, like, would you give these guys who still need to do something to get their name out there, yet at the same time, just be mindful of what could happen? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
You have to recognize what your value is to the fans, because a lot of guys, they don't read. Most of us do read, you know, Twitter, or back in the day it was message boards or whatever. And they always say, you know, you shouldn't read any of the critiques because you're going to shit on yourself forever. But, you know, you really should know what your value and your worth is, especially to the fans, because – you know, a lot of times they don't like how we don't want to see Joey die. No. The fans don't want to see that. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. I get with Deathmatch, you know, the fans that go to that, they love the blood and guts. And they love seeing the most ridiculous, insane stuff that people put themselves through. But, you know, that's their mentality. But for regular wrestling fans, which Joey wrestles a lot in front of, they don't want to see him get hurt. Right. I mean, I saw him do something with JT Dunn where the both of them had a garbage can set standing up, and they were taking bumps on the garbage can. And I, it just, it, like, it hurt myself watching. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, and that's exactly was my reaction to it. You know what I mean? And they were already, it was a dog collar match, if I remember correctly, and they were already bleeding, and they were already, you know, beat up. And then they do that, and I was just like, why? Just stop. You don't need to go that far. You know what I mean? No matter what happens, I love the fans. I love that they come out to support, and I love that they will go to the end of the earth for you. But at the same time, you don't need that much approval. At least I don't think. And it might be hard coming from someone like me who I've thrown people into walls. I've done stupid shit. That's what, you know what I mean? Like, but as a 38-year-old guy, you know, I'm looking back at all my friends who can't walk or who are in constant pain, and they got to either smoke weed or take pills, or guys that I lost like Balls Mahoney, who I was cool with, Axel Rotten. You know, all these guys who did all this crazy shit, and they're not on Earth anymore because of it. And for what? Did any of those fans help them out in their dying day? You know what I mean? I love the fans. Don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying, you have to know what your limit is and what your value is.
And, like, how much – I mean, everyone knows that the fans are the ones that pay. The fans are the ones that go. But how much can you really allow them to dictate what you – what product you put out there?
Well, you, I mean, they really
– it's a tough – it's a, it's
it
like
really
a
is a tough
22.
Thing because, you know, if they don't keep coming back, then, you know, obviously, you know, you're doing something wrong. But at the same time – wrestling survived 200-something years, even
that's,
more.
That's a good point.
And they weren't doing light tubes. Light tubes weren't even invented when wrestling right. was – get like, if you look back at the
– I think Abraham Lincoln wrestled in a first-ever light tube match, I think.
But,
pretty
like,
sure.
If you look back to the days of when you know, the 1920s and 30s, where they had these massive sellouts, 80,000 – you know, people coming to watch wrestling, and it was the most boring wrestling ever.
Oh, every Bruno Sammartino match.
No, it's boring compared to what you see nowadays.
Oh, yeah,
but
no,
those
of
people
course.
In the 20s, that was the hottest shit
but
for
exact,
them.
That's exactly what it is. But they weren't killing themselves.
No, which is exactly why I blame WWE for doing all this fucking shit on the apron. Because all their announcers put over, it's the hardest part of the ring. No. Anywhere getting hit in that ring is supposed to be the hardest part of the ring. It's not supposed to be fucking, you know, like landing on feathers. When you land in the center of that ring, it's supposed to fucking hurt.
It does.
The only difference is when you land on the concrete on the outside.
And I would.
Because that's concrete. That fucking hurts so much more.
Why are you throwing your hands up like jazz hands? Like, oh, it's concrete.
Because it was always in the ring or on the floor. There was never apron shit. There just wasn't.
Well, this is how you know that a floor bump has been devalued. Asuka took that rough bump on her first match on Raw or the pay-per-view that was the night before off the apron straight to the floor. Now, smart fans know that padding is nice. It's like a bed on that padding on the floor. But if you're watching it for the first time and you see her take that bump and then she gets up and finishes and wins the match.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch anymore.
Not even registering.
Yeah, no.
That's the other thing.
Yeah, and that's, you know, no matter what, he's a piece of shit. Shawn Michaels sold his ass off for everybody. And that's what made him...
Especially for Hulk Hogan.
That's what made him great for so many people, though. You know, and he wasn't taking crazy bumps. I mean, yeah, he had the Hell in the Cell where he...
Oh, he was taking crazy bumps.
Oh, boo!
But, you know...
you fucking Cyclops-looking motherfucker.
Jesus. But he was selling, and everything that he took or received, you felt it through his facial expressions. Same thing with – even with Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan really didn't take that many crazy – you know, he didn't take any bumps, really. You know, right. Simple bumps. But you always felt – he was always – he knew, I'm going to register towards the fans so they feel my pain.
Oh, the fucking facials with the comebacks and everything with the puffing out his cheeks like the
– He didn't have to be a Bret Hart. He could be a Hulk Hogan because he knew his expressions were going to get the people invested in his match.
But even Bret Hart, when he took those big bumps, they were out of the ordinary and they didn't happen more than once a year.
Well, no, he took one bump every match. That was, I don't know how the hell he took it. And that was that chest bump in the corner. Yeah.
Oh, well, that one,
yeah,
sure.
I have no idea because he always ate it so hard.
But I'm talking about shit like that first dive he took through the table when he was working Diesel.
Yeah, well, I
mean, what the fuck, dude? Like, Brett just went through the table. It was crazy.
Yeah, he didn't have to be McFoley on that. But, you know, he still knew how to make people feel his pain. And that's the whole thing about wrestling. If you make people feel what's going on, they're going to invest and want to watch no matter what. Because they want to see how you're going to respond to that. You know, everybody wants the underdog to win. Why do people like Rey Mysterio? Because he's the underdog. You want to see how he's going to somehow pull it out. You know what I mean? It became cliche after a while how he was doing it because he wasn't changing his style up. But you still wanted to watch. When you watch him in ECW, you're like, there's no way this little 5-foot Mexican is going to do anything. You know what I mean? Am I wrong? You know? But then he would hit that friggin' beautiful Rana where, I mean, how many times did Psychosis spike his head and Juventud spike his head Rana, to sell the move on a Rana?
He climbed up to the announce booth and he did the fucking moonsault onto the fucking tables on the floor.
Yep. But
it's fucking crazy.
But you had to watch what he was going to do to see how he was going to push it.
Yeah.
For him, those bumps were safe because if you watch Mexican wrestling, the Mexicans are fucking nuts. I don't care what anybody says. They will do the craziest shit and act like it's just us walking down the stairs.
I'll give you one guess who I think is the best Mexican wrestler, my favorite Mexican wrestler ever. Don't you dare. Recent, from recent until, I don't know, 80s, 90s. I don't know how long he's been around.
It's not going to be Mystico.
No. You're way out of the ballpark. You're probably never going to get it.
I have no.
Super Porky.
Yeah, Super Porky's awesome.
Fucking hysterical. He comes out with all the hot bitches, dances to fucking bomba and shit.
He's got like 20 kids in the business, too.
He's fucking amazing.
He's awesome.
What? You making fun of me?
I didn't say anything.
Super Porky rules. Stop doing fucking bumps. What are you doing? Show Michael?
Tallest, fattest midget in WWE history.
Fucking great.
Super Porky. That's a weird one.
You remember I played his fucking...
Oh, no.
The entrance music starts with fucking fucking Porky Pig with the beat.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Kevin and I were playing it. I'm like, wait, this can't be right. And then all of a sudden it went into the music. Like, yeah. See, you remember.
I do remember now. It takes a couple minutes.
Do we have any final questions for Mr. Mac?
I don't have any final questions.
Survivor
Series is Sunday. I'll tell you what's going to happen. Can I just...
All right, you got a minute. Go for it.
Triple H got added to Survivor Series last night.
Oh, Jason Jordan looked like a fucking, like a puss.
Well, he got hurt in the Bray Wyatt. They worked an angle where he got
Kurt Angle looked like a bitch because he didn't fucking fight for his kid.
Triple H takes every person in that match that was in NXT and he starts a stable.
Yeah.
Joe, Finn, Shinsuke, and Bobby Roode.
Oh, it's going to be like the...
With Triple H as the leader.
Oh, God. The
calling
the
it now.
Come on, guys.
It's going to be the skull. Dude, the logo's going to be the skull with the cross on top, and it's going to have, like, the three H's on top, the Helmsley
Club.
We're
next.
You watch. You might be right on that.
I wouldn't be surprised. They need to do something, though, because there's a lot of dead nonsense on that show.
Fuck yeah, on both shows.
I would love nothing more than for you to be right.
That doesn't happen often.
But no, I just
you're pretty good. You're up there.
I don't see it happening. I love it. I love it.
But I mean, why would they throw him in there last minute?
Well, to build up to him and Angle.
Because they realized Jason Jordan was the shits, hopefully.
I don't know. I think it would be different.
He's not horrible. He's just young.
Matt said it last week. You look at the fucking 10 competitors in that match. 9 of them, yes. Jason Jordan?
Eh. But that's okay.
No, it's not. They did it to The Rock at fucking at Survivor Series, and he ain't as nuts.
Didn't he win?
They put him over.
His first match. That was his first match.
I was there for that.
He was facing the roughest odds, The Rock.
He overcame.
Yeah, well.
He beat the Stalker and Goldust, didn't he?
Don't you dare disrespect Barry Windham.
I'm not disrespecting Barry Windham. The Stalker was the shits. With the New York crowd right away, go Kramer! Flex Cavana, get the fuck out of here. Do we have Mr. Mac's plug information? We want to get that out there for
the
folks.
Well, I was
going to
share a quick rock
story. Yeah. All right, go for it.
So, do it.
Back when they were doing the Shotgun Saturday Night shows, they did the one at the All-Star Cafe, and me and Key were there. This is before we got into wrestling. And we were there just, you know, it was Shotgun Saturday Night. It's free taping. Fuck it, let's go. So, we go and we check it. First of all, if I'm not mistaken, a certain somebody grabbed Sable's ass and someone else got in trouble.
And, all right, we're not going to name names.
No, but the one world warrior knows very well whose hand that was. They grabbed her ass, and it wasn't mine.
Terrible.
So, but, you know, we were there watching.
One warrior nation?
No.
No, no, no. No.
Come on, Kevin.
So,
get up on your lingo.
I know who the one world warrior is.
So, you know, you realize he's Ryu and American Dragon is Ken, right?
Ooh. Nice.
I never knew that. That's yeah, they're the same person, just different fucking palette swap.
Different geese.
Yeah. But anyway, so later on, we decided after the show, we're like, all right, at All Star Cafe, we're fucking 17. Let's fucking hang out, you know? Let's eat. And I go to use a payphone to call my mom, and it's by the men's room. And my mom's like, "Where are you at? I can't hear you." And she's like, "You know, it's really loud back there." All of a sudden, The Rock walks out. And I was like, "Rock, tell my mom where we're at." And he picks up the phone and he's like, "Hey, mom, what's up?" And, no, yeah, you're Steve's good. Steve's good. Nah, we're at the All Star Cafe. And my mom, I don't know what the hell my mom's telling him. She could be telling him anything. No, we'll take care of him. We're going to get him nice and drunk this weekend. Yeah, no, we're going to get him laid, too. Him, yeah, oh, he's with his cousin. We're getting them both laid this week. By guys. And, all right, mom, I'll see you later. And that was my introduction to The Rock.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
That's a great story. Amazing. Steve, it's been a pleasure. I mean, 2 hours flew by.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah. At Steve Mack. DHS on Twitter. Give him a follow. He's doing
also
Jersey.
Instagram.
Oh, Instagram
well.
Too. Right.
And on Facebook, it's just Steve Mack.
I didn't know if you wanted to give that out.
No, it's all right. All right. No, I got a private and I got a fucking.
Okay.
He's
private.
Got
no
a good boy.
You got to have the nice, luscious tatas to have my private.
Jeez. Oh, nice. Look at that.
see if I can find that.
Can I give a quick this and that?
Yeah, yeah.
High Spot Podcast debuts this week. They had Laurel Van Ness, Terry Runnels, Sugu Young, Katarina Lee.
Great guests.
All four ladies, absolutely. Let me see who else. Genuine Taste of Wrestling, the new episode's up. Don't forget My Unconventional Life with Nigel McGuinness tomorrow. You can catch us on the replay. I'm trying to think of who else is coming. Turnbuckle Throwbacks Friday. I think it's going to be a filatorial. And Radioactive Metal. Their episode dropped last week, their brand new debut with Brian Thompson from Drive By Bukkake.
That's the show with the chick, right?
That's the show with Corrine, yes.
She's pretty hot.
I'm glad you said that. I will pass that along.
She listens.
Did you mention Gino? Did we mention Gino?
Gino? Oh, no. Gino doesn't have a new show this week.
I thought he just... All right, never mind.
No, but Sean Donovan, A Genuine Taste of Wrestling. Yes, Dunkaroo.
The Genuine Article.
He just started his show last week. We previewed it last week. This week it actually starts. I forget who his interviewee is, but that's already up on the network, so go check that out. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Don't forget, our t-shirts are on sale. ProWrestlingTees.com. That's Shining Wizards. Facebook, Instagram... Twitter at Wizards Podcast.
CollarandElbowBrand.com.
There you go.
Use the code word Wizards at checkout and save 10% off of
Amazon.
Your order.
It's Christmas.
Oh,
go to our Amazon. Amazon.shiningwizards.com. Go now.
Real quick, I think I did this last time or one of the last times I was here. One of my favorite things to do is talk like a Japanese commentator.
Do it.
So whenever I'm here, I always am very tempted. Shining Wizard. Oh, Shining Wizard Podcaster. Yeah.
I think we got that isolated. We got the drop.
What do you want to hear as we close out the show, Steve? Your call, the guest pick.
Can we hear Jackie Moon, Love Me Sexy?
Ooh.
Jackie Moon. Hey, you're listening to the Shining Wizards Radio. Jackie Moon. Gonna howl at the moon tonight, but there's a commercial, motherfucker.
Listening to the sexy, sultry sounds of man. Jackie Moon.
Ooh. Boner Factory.
We'll be back next week, studio, whatever.
That's right.
Matt's birthday celebration.
Yay.
Next Tuesday night.
Oh, so it's going to be you and me getting hammered?
Probably.
Yes.
Huge thanks again to Steve for joining us tonight.
Guys, can we set up a karaoke? Yeah.
I'm down.
Jackie yes.
Moon. Well, the bar that I'm going to now has karaoke.
Oh, that's right.
Let's invite you out on a mandate?
Let's have somebody tape this, and I'll sing Jackie Moon.
I can go live on Instagram, I guess, but no one really... I'm slacking with the Instagram coverage.
You got to get your IGs.
Next time you come, dude, I got tons of karaoke games for 360. I got Rock Band, Guitar Hero, everything.
We need to get some cameras on that. I will tell you that in Japan... I wasn't singing karaoke. However, I ended up topless on top of a bar singing Eminem, holding shots of Wild Turkey because Homicide felt like he was Ric Flair that night.
Nice.
Party with the Nature Boy.
That's Woo! Fucking awesome.
Stop, wait, sing some Jackie Moon.
I want to do a little thing with you.
That's right.
I want to do a little thing with you. When I say love me, you say sexy. Love me, sexy.
Oh, no. We're not done.
Loving me sexy is the thing to do.
Yeah.
When I say love me, you say sexy. Love me, sexy. Everyone wants to love me sexy.
My man, pot
love me
pants.
Sexy. My favorite line is the opening of the next verse. Freak of the week, are you in the mood? Wait, I'll just sing it when you come.
Go
down.
For it.
Fuck it. Baby, we're naked and we'll all get sexy. All get sexy. Freak of the week, are you in the mood? To drive to the stars with Jackie Moon. When I say love me, you say sexy. Love me,
sexy.
Sexy. Zodiac signs are compatible. Clocking that ass from across the room. Your body said love me, your mind said sexy. Love me, sexy. Woo! Are we going to do this karaoke night now, guys?
We got to go. Stay tuned on the like rant. That's coming up next. RantyAndRio.com. It's the Shining Wizards. We are out.
Peace.
See ya.